Moisture is the most important factor in eliminating subterranean termite activity. Remove all scrap wood and plant clippings when landscaping. According to noted termite expert Paul Hardy of Orkin, by putting mulch, foliage, or firewood stacks against the base of their homes, homeowners create a food source for termites and a highway into their houses. Some warning signs that you may have termites include a temporary swarm of winged insects in your home and wood that sounds hollow when tapped. To learn more, visit www.orkin.com or call 1-800-800-ORKIN. More companies are taking steps to ensure that they can remain open for business, even in bad weather. For example, many corporations employ virtual private networks to ensure that teleworkers can securely access corporate networks from any location. High-speed, always-on broadband internet access allows teleworkers to be more productive at home. Also, be sure all work-related software applications are properly installed on your home computer. For more tips, visit www.mci.com/conferencing.
The news is next on Southwest Florida's news and talk leader, WINK Fort Myers, WNOG Naples, 1240 and 1270.
CBS News, I'm Dave Barrett. 10 years in prison, a dishonorable discharge, a loss of benefits and pay. That's what Charles Grainer gets. He's the Army specialist convicted of abusing Iraqi detainees. He was sentenced this afternoon after earlier testifying before a military jury at Fort Hood, Texas. Reporter Jay Gormley is there.
For nearly 3 hours, Grainer told a 10-member military jury that military intelligence ordered him to break down detainees for interrogation. Grainer says he complained to the chain of command that he did not agree with the way Iraqi detainees were being treated. The 36-year-old says military intelligence responded by stating, "We know what we're doing. Follow our instructions."
But Grainer also admitted that some of his actions were criminal. Some perspective from Baghdad and reporter Beth Potter.
Relatives visiting detainees at Abu Ghraib believe anyone who tortured their loved ones should be put to death. The Baghdad resident Awis Hussein points out that Iraq police and military officers did the same or worse under Saddam Hussein, and they'll never be brought to justice.
Asked if he had any remorse following his trial, Charles Grainer said simply, "There's a war going on, bad things happen." Thousands of pounds of magnesium burned at a recycling plant in Anderson, Indiana, that led to thousands of evacuations northeast of Indianapolis. Now, Anderson Police Detective Terry Sollers says people are being allowed to go home.
We still have fire units out there at the scene monitoring that situation, and it may take a day or two for that to burn totally out.
No reported injuries from that toxic fire. How do you really know what you'll get if retirement is decades away and you're depending on help from the government?
A child born today can expect less than a 2% return after inflation on the money they pay into Social Security. A conservative mix of bonds and stocks would over time produce a larger return.
The president on the radio continued to push for his partial privatization plan for Social Security, which might carry a $2 trillion price tag. Reform now? Maybe that shouldn't happen, according to Senator Debbie Stabenow, the Michigan Democrat.
Our nation already is staggering under the largest budget deficit in the history of the country. Taking on even more debt could destabilize financial markets, drive up interest rates, and stifle economic growth.
Snow of between 30 and 35 feet in depth has buried at least two skiers in the backcountry near Park City, Utah. A day ago, they were trapped in an avalanche.
The searching has been very slow because of the snow depth, obviously, and the conditions that we've encountered.
That's Summit County Sheriff Dave Edmonds.
We haven't found anybody. The reason why we're able to confirm one victim is because they were traveling with somebody. That individual saw them get covered in the slide, and they had not been seen or heard from since.
Flooding a worry in Indiana, where the Wabash River is above flood stage, and this weekend it may hit its highest level in two decades there. This is CBS News.
Now, 2004 was Sutherland Nissan's biggest year. We sold more new Nissans because we sold them for less. Well, we're going to get bigger in 2005, bigger savings. We will not let any other Nissan dealer take our title as king of Altima value. Don't pay over $20,000 for your all-new 05 Altima. $15,988, that's all you pay. And that's why we say at Sutherland, when the price ends in 88, savings are great. $15,988 loaded. Stereo CD, tilt cruise, factory air. Power everywhere. Naples, I'm not kidding. Lehigh Acres, more than fair. When you buy a new Nissan at Sutherland, there's always a happy ending because you always save extra dollars, and that happens every day. the Sutherland Way. Smack dab in the middle of Fort Myers on US 41 south of Bell Tower Shops on Tamiami Trail. Your all-new 05 loaded Altima. $15,988 at Florida's true king of Altima value, Sutherland Nissan today. Yippee-yi-yo-ki-yay.
PINs 124-989 and 228-185. Prices for factory rebates and dealer discounts plus government taxes, finance, stock, prep, and emission fees.
The following is a paid commercial announcement. The views and opinions expressed and the advice offered by the host are not necessarily those of Wink WNOG, Fort Myers Broadcasting, Meridian Broadcasting, or any of their affiliate sponsors or assigns. James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. And now, you've heard the right. All that's left is the truth. Guy James.
Yes, indeed. Guy James here with you on the Guy James Show, and happy to be here tonight coming to you from the blue waters and sandy beaches of beautiful Fort Myers, Florida. Here we are in 1240 a.m. in Fort Myers, Florida, 1270 WNOG in Naples, Florida, and surrounding area. And, of course, we're on the Internet. Lots of you listening locally maybe don't know that, www.theguyjamesshow.com. You can listen live on there as well. A vast Internet audience listening tonight. And we hope you'll stay tuned for the whole show. We've got an interesting show tonight, I promise you that. We've got a guest coming up tonight, Dr. John Sperling, founder of the University of Phoenix, a more interesting man you will never talk to, I guarantee you. He's coming along about 7:35 tonight, so we're looking forward to that. We've got much to talk about. We've got the inauguration, this, that, and the other thing, things we normally talk about here. And, of course, this being a talk show, I'd certainly like to have you call in tonight. 888-602-7500, 7501, 7502, 7503, and 7504. For all of you folks listening on the Internet, anybody can call on those numbers. If you're in Collier County, 263-6570, or Lee County, 479-5540. It's an audience participation show, folks, and you are expected to get your 2 cents worth in. Whether you be with us or against us, we're glad to hear from you always. Another interesting week. Seems like when the Bushes have been in office, there's never a dull moment here in the United States. It just seems like there never is a dull moment. Many things that we'll end up talking about tonight, that we're going to be all over the place with many subjects. As I mentioned, we're going to talk to Dr. John Sperling. We'll be talking about he and George Soros' war on the war on drugs, which, is, as all of you know and every thinking American knows, has been a complete and utter failure. And so we will be talking about that a little later on. Well, another week goes by, and I'm sitting around trying to think today, what am I going to talk about tonight? Sometimes you just stay current with the news and talk about that. And once in a while, I like to be topical, and I think, what am I going to talk about tonight? And you sit there, and you know, I don't have writer's block, I guess, because I don't write it, but couldn't think of anything to say. And something spurred me on this morning. I was someplace this morning where they played the national anthem. And I heard the national anthem played this morning. And as I listened to the beautiful and familiar notes, I really did experience a profound sense of sadness this morning. I used to hear Francis Scott Key's masterpiece and have feelings of pride and joy. And I also had the knowledge that this great nation was the great shining example, if you will, of all that's right and good with mankind and the planet Earth, you know. And we stood for justice and equality and fairness. We stood for many things, but most of all, we stood for truth. That's the way I was raised, to believe all that here in this nation. You know, not that we never pulled the wool over other people's eyes, but by and large, we stood for truth. And if the government of the United States said something, the rest of the world could take it to the bank. And every other nation in the world knew it. Our word was gold. And as an American, it just, you know what I'm talking about, it just felt good. It just felt really good and secure to know that we were loved or respected, or both, by every other nation on this planet. And from the time we became a major player on the world stage, we were trusted, starting back with Teddy Roosevelt and Woodrow Wilson and Franklin Roosevelt and Harry Truman and John Kennedy. All of those great men had an enormous influence on the rest of the world, and they were able to wield the influence they had because the world trusted. They trusted the word of the United States government. You know, I've told the story before. I heard it from James Carville, but I told the story about President Kennedy sending Dean Acheson to brief Charles de Gaulle about the Cuban Missile Crisis. Mr. Acheson explained the situation to de Gaulle. He got up from his chair, walked across the room to get his briefcase, and President de Gaulle asked Mr. Acheson, what are you doing? And Mr. Acheson told him he had photographs of the missiles in the briefcase. And de Gaulle said to Acheson, sir, you have given me the word of the President of the United States. I don't need any more proof than that. Now, that might have not been so unusual at that time, but can you imagine that same scene happening with the head of state of any other country in the world right now? Bush sending an emissary over to... You know, there wouldn't be one single leader who wouldn't demand a mountain of absolute indisputable proof. That's how far we've fallen in the world community. We're no longer trusted. In fact, we're looked upon as some sort of pariah to be feared and not be trusted anymore. And as an American, that hurts. It hurts to the bone. It hurts to know that the present leadership of our nation has destroyed the trust it took generations to establish. It hurts to know that hundreds of millions of people in other nations look upon us with fear and trepidation. The rest of the world not only doesn't trust our leadership, but now that they've seen that Americans have given Bush a second term, after all he's done to destroy the trust, the rest of the world is wondering about the good judgment of the American people. And folks, that is you and me. We are the people. And I don't know about you, but when I meet someone from another country, and where I live, I meet many, many, many of them every day from other countries. I tell them right up front that I don't like Bush, I don't support his policies, and most of all, I do not support his thirst for power and his horrible judgment on matters that impact the rest of the world. I try as best I can to explain that approximately half of the people in this country want nothing to do with Bush and his ruinous administration. I'll try and make that clear. You know, they've endangered the welfare of the people of the United States, and they've endangered the peoples of the rest of the world. And here at home, the poor, the sick, the elderly, even the military personnel have all suffered tremendously because of Bush's misguided policies. Oh, sure, the rich have prospered, but they're a small minority of the people. The troubling fact is that the general welfare of the vast majority of the people of the United States has taken a terrible beating under the Bush administration. And from all indications, we'll continue to suffer until we sweep Washington clean of these guys. There's no hope of recovering our nation's good name as long as the likes of Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld and Rice and Wolfowitz and others are in the Beltway. I just hope and pray the rest of the world will be patient with us for four more years until we can put a decent, honorable, and trustworthy government in place once again. In the meantime, I'll probably still shed a tear when I hear the national anthem, only for a different reason than before. I think it's tough being a liberal American right now. It is, and it's got nothing to do with losing an election. It's got all to do with having the people in the White House. You know, there have been Republican presidents that I thought, well, they weren't that bad. You know, Dwight Eisenhower. I respected Dwight Eisenhower enormously. My dad didn't. My dad was a yellow dog Democrat, just like me. But I still respect Eisenhower. Looking back on him, he was a wise man. And there have been other Republican presidents that weren't so bad. But my God, what have we sunk to with the president we have right now? You know, you have to wonder every time he's opened his mouth, is he lying to us? Is he telling the truth? We just don't know. We just don't know. And, you know, the scare tactics are coming up with we're going to talk about it a little later in the show, but, you know, one scare after another after another. And you know, one thing I did want to mention tonight, I made a little note around here of some dates, and I don't know what I did with it, but have you noticed, I'm looking through my notes here, I can't find it anyplace. Have you noticed there hadn't been, a terror alert in 2.5 months? Doesn't that seem odd to some of you? You know, we had a huge New Year's celebration in New York City and lots of large cities around the nation, but no terror alerts. In fact, I haven't even heard of any yellow or red alerts for the inauguration coming up next week. You know, it's just one more example of the fact that the Bush administration has used fear at every possible turn to scare hell out of millions of Americans just so they'd remain loyal to him because he kept them safe. Heard lots of ladies around the country when they interviewed the women said, we voted for him because he kept us safe. Millions of women. He kept them and their children from being killed by those evil terrorists he talked about every other day right up until the election. They're coming to get you. They're coming to get you, but me, George Bush, I protected you from the evil ones. But now he's gained a second term. Suddenly there's no more heightened alerts. You know, using fear to manipulate American voters is absolutely unconscionable. But since when has anybody in the Bush administration shown even a hint of a conscience? Not that I have seen. Let's go to the phones. We got John in Fort Myers. Hi, John.
Well, good evening. Nice to hear you. Well, you know, I always wonder about these alerts you're talking about. When Bin Laden wakes up in the morning and looks in the mirror, he must just laugh because he's been able to get this country involved into a tar baby that they're just not going to get out of for years. I heard the other day that we're going to have 150,000 troops in Iraq for the next 5 years. Now, how can they say that? It's unbelievable.
Well,
and why would we want to create a democracy over there? People must go to their dictionary. I did this. I wrote down all the forms of government: republic, democracy, fascism, monarchy, communism, socialism, theocracies. Look at the definitions and see what these are. And in a democracy, it's a government in which the people hold supreme power. We don't even do that here in our country. Am I wrong?
No, you're not. You're not. The people, you know, we're going to talk about that a little later on when Dr. Sperling comes on. I don't know if he'll talk about that tonight, but we've looked at this retro versus metro America, split up between the red and the blue states. And what happens is the way it's split up right now, one third of the Americans are controlling the other two thirds.
Well, I invite people to go to their dictionaries, write down all the forms of government you can think of, look up the definitions, and look them up in two types of dictionaries. One, a very simple pocket dictionary, and then the other large dictionary, and see what you come up with. And like I say, I don't know why we want to have democracy over there. Now, President wants to deal with Social Security. This man hasn't got a clue about Social Security, how it works, how it's funded, anything about it. All he can do is do a scare tactic. And why would we listen to a man who told us that we went into war for weapons of mass destruction, and now the government has come out and said, well, we're going to quit looking for them. It looks like they did, never existed in the first place.
But, John, it was faulty intelligence.
Oh.
Oh,
oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, John, it's good that you bring up that point. We had Scott Ritter on this program, and everybody knows who Scott Ritter is. He was a weapons inspector. We had Scott on this program.
Sure, I heard the program.
Yeah, we had him on a couple of times, and both times Scott said, you know, there's no weapons of mass destruction over there. They're not there. They haven't been there for a long time. They were destroyed a long time ago. He knew that. We knew that. And millions of Americans knew that. And yet, inside the Beltway, senators, congressmen, the President of the United States, we're to take it that they believe that? I don't know.
And I listened to shortwave for years. I knew there was no weapons of mass destruction, and I knew these foreign countries that wouldn't join with us also knew there were none of those types of weapons. Now, if they had faulty information, why should we believe the President on Social Security? He's probably getting faulty information.
Hey.
I wouldn't be surprised.
No heads rolled over that, did they? Not a single one.
No, and you know, they listened to Ahmed Shalabi, who was had warrants out for his arrest in several Arab states because of his criminal record on banking. He defrauded these different states and different countries. Why would we listen to a person who's a criminal on the run? And, of course, now he's over there campaigning to become leader of that country, which is what he was doing here with our guys. And Rumsfeld thought, well, we'll have a guy we can put in the way of Ahmed Shalabi. And my wish this year is that when the president comes up to that Thanksgiving turkey, he takes an axe and just chops its head off, because we all eat turkeys, we all kill turkeys. It's the biggest foolish thing I've ever seen, and I want him to have Donald Rumsfeld standing right next to him. And then he takes that axe and he looks at Rumsfeld and said, okay, Rumsfeld, they played that tape over and over again about how you knew they had weapons of mass destruction and you knew where they were. Now, don't you think it's time you told us?
Yeah, all right.
But, no, this man is not credible. He listens to people giving false information. He doesn't question it. The media doesn't question it. The media and the congressmen and senators that we elect should be questioning these things before they voted unanimously to give this man carte blanche. What can I tell you?
There was no excuse. As you heard us on this program before, we've blamed everybody who voted for that. Democrat, Republican, it makes no difference.
You bet.
The idea that our leadership in this country was completely duped.
And then I saw, and I'll be quick, I saw a man who's written a book about American history. I don't know his name, but he's on C-SPAN. And giving the history of what this country's done, the occupation of the Philippines for 50 years, occupation of Cuba, we're an imperialist nation, we're occupying Iraq now. And he had more callers calling in, beating up on him because they didn't like to hear what he heard, which is the history of this country and the truth about what's going on. And these Republicans, for some reason, they're holier than thou. They don't want to hear anything else that might burst their bubble.
Well, that's a fact.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, John. Thanks very much for the call. Good to hear from you. Let's go to Diane in North Fort Myers.
Yeah, hi, Guy. I just wanted to bring out two facts. One about Social Security. I have yet to hear one American complain and speak up and say, where is our money that government has stolen? You know, that is our money. Clinton had it in a lockbox, remember, upon leaving. Well, someone stole it, and that is our money. Another thing I want to bring up is the fact that on this, with what he was just talking about there, no, they weren't misled with faulty information to go to Iraq. They had very good information, and it has to do with the stock markets. These people have been profiteering from this from the get-go. They're making billions and billions of dollars off of this Iraqi invasion, and I have yet to hear anyone, any American, bring up the fact about that, that it's all a lie. And I would like to see just what one senator, one congressman, one president and vice president make every hour off of that war into their private bank account from private stocks that we, the American people, are not the elite and can't even buy a stock into.
Well, there's billions of dollars, as you said, being made off this war.
That's right.
Unfortunately, war is a dirty business.
There was no faulty information. It was very good information given from the behind the scenes of the stock market and the good old Greenspan crowd there in Carlisle Group.
Well, they're going to make their money no matter what. You know they'll never be stopped from that.
So
Diane,
I just wish people would quit playing along with their game and their lies.
Well,
you know, speak the truth about it.
People got to stand up and take a stand. And the problem is, all too few Americans are willing to do.
Well, I'm angry that they've stolen away our Social Security money.
Well,
I'm angry about that.
And well,
I'm angry
we need
that
to be.
They're profiteering off of the bloodshed of our men and women in uniform and innocent bloodshed of Iraqi citizens over there, just to line their pockets with more money.
You're exactly right.
What do they need?
You're exactly right. We need
thank
to stand up
God.
And take a hand. So, thank you so much for your call. You know, the problem is right now, and I see this every day, and I think most of you do as well. Nobody gives a damn, or far too few people give a damn. It's sickening. it really is. You talk to the average Joe out in the street, what about the war? Oh, well, you know. Well. Hey, we're going to pause for a break right now. You're listening to Guy James Show and Wink WNOG, 1240, 1270, Fort Myers in Naples, Florida. We'll be back right after these words. Don't go anywhere.
The Guy James Show.
Southwest Florida's official news, weather, and traffic station, Wink WNOG.
Monday on Wink News at 6. Is it red or yellow?
I didn't know I did it.
Before you cross the line, you better know for sure, because if you run a red light,
mine's 115.50.
It could cost you big. Wink News shows you where local law is cracking down on red light runners. Monday, only on Wink News at 6.
All new! For the first time since surviving the devastating tsunami, Nate Berkus returns to tell his story. Next, Oprah.
Start your day with Patrick Comer, Stacey Adams, and Marisa Oakes on Wink News This Morning. First, with breaking news.
Traffic is at a standstill this morning.
First, with overnight news.
Here's a look at what's happened while you were asleep.
First, with weather.
You can expect to see plenty of sunshine.
Wake up to a new morning with a team you can trust to get you going fast. Wink News This Morning, only on Southwest Florida's News Leader.
Life is better with a boat. And boats are better at Southwest Florida's number one marine retailer, Boats Unlimited. Right now, only Boats Unlimited has double the factory rebates on hundreds of new boats. Double the factory rebates on Hurricane Deck boats, Sweetwater Pontoon boats, and Polar Fishing boats, all powered by Yamaha. $1,000 rebates become $2,000. $3,000 rebates become $6,000. Only at Boats Unlimited. Right now, the Hurricane 196 Fun Deck with a Yamaha 90 horsepower 4-stroke is only $18,995 and is under $200 a month. $18,995, under $200 a month. Hurricane Deck boats, Sweetwater Pontoon boats, and Polar Fishing boats, all powered by Yamaha. All on sale with double the factory rebates. Only at Southwest Florida's number one marine retailer, Boats Unlimited, with two great locations at Del Prado and Southeast 46th Street, Cape Coral, and on Tamiami Trail, Charlotte Harbor. Life is better with a boat.
Whether or not your body functions efficiently is partly up to you. Strive for good health by practicing the following suggestions. Choose foods from the five major food groups: breads, cereals, and other grains, fruits, vegetables, meat, fish, poultry, and protein alternatives, and milk, yogurt, and cheese. Refrain from smoking and chewing tobacco. They not only may stain your teeth, but also increase your risk for periodontal disease and mouth, throat, or lung cancers. Exercise regularly and try to avoid in-between-meal snacking. Remember, brush your teeth twice a day with a fluoride toothpaste, floss once a day, and visit your dentist regularly. Practicing good health habits is beneficial to your body and helps you keep a beautiful smile. For the ADA Dental Minute, I'm Dr. Maria Lopez Howell. To find out more about your dental health, visit ADA online at ada.org.
Lawyer, doctor, teacher, pilot.
What did you want to be when you grew up?
Architect, actor, politician, writer.
What does your child want to be?
Musician, scientist, chef.
Well, if you struggle with reading, both of you have little chance of becoming any of those things. But nothing's worse than giving up on your dreams. That's why with family learning programs, parents and kids learn together, so they succeed together on things like computer and interview skills, GED preparation, and English as a second language, plus preschool education for kids. The results are amazing. But what's truly amazing is that the only thing it will cost you is your time. Family Learning Programs, the first step to a better life. Turn your life around today by calling toll-free 1-877-FAMLIT1. And be what you've always wanted to be.
Happy.
Brought to you by the National Center for Family Literacy and the Ad Council.
Your weekend station, Wink WNOG.
You've heard the right. Now all that's left is the truth. Guy James.
All right, we've got just a couple of minutes coming up until the bottom of the hour. We're going to pause for some news. And no, we're not going to pause for news. Oh, I was told we were going to pause for news at the bottom of the hour. Okay, I guess we're not. We are. I'll just take a couple minutes and let you know we're going to have Dr. John Sperling coming on right after the news at the bottom of the hour. He's going to be on at around 35 after the hour. Somebody sent me these Republican commandments. I think I'll spend the time up until the bottom of the hour talking about the Republican commandments. I love these. Thou shalt not kill, except when killing a person teaches them a useful lesson about freedom, democracy, and the American way. It's it shall be okay for there to be poverty, homelessness, suffering, disease, famine, starvation, torture, grief, and death, as long as it is God's will, and as long as it's someone else's suffering other than you. If thou shalt encounter a sick man, thou shalt never offer him health care. Just pray for him instead. If thou shalt encounter a destitute man, thou shalt never offer him even a tiny fraction of thy wealth. Just say, get a job and walk away. Thou shalt not question any dictum of the Republican Party, no matter how nonsensical. Thou shalt endlessly repeat and echo every proclamation that thou hears from any tentacle of the Republican propaganda machine. And it shall not be allowed for two persons of the same sex to get married unless it's two hot dino babes, and you can download the video later for not more than $9.95. I like that one. Thou shalt believe that the way to teach a nation about democracy is by first dropping bombs on it and then driving around it with guns pointed at everyone. Thou shalt mislabel heroic bravery as cowardice, as they did to Kerry in Vietnam. You know, they've got their ways. They have their ways. We're going to pause for the news at the bottom of the hour now. We'll be right back, and so don't you go anywhere.
Restoring the liberal media, the Guy James Show.
Number 400,611.
Number 400,000.
This year, United Way helped train over 400,000 jobless people.
100,902.
700,000.
We took more than 700,000 homeless off the streets and gave them shelter. We helped provide quality child care for over 1 million families.
1,200,000.
But none of the numbers really matter. What matters to United Way are the people behind them.
My name is Mary.
The independence we help restore.
My name is David.
The communities we unite.
Jake.
The newfound optimism.
Sarah.
The sense of purpose and of community coming together.
Lee.
Diane. Luisa.
Michael.
Those results go beyond the numbers. And for United Way, that's what matters. For more information, call your local United Way. Or log on to unitedway.org.
This is Craig T. Nelson. Picture a network of children's hospitals that provides world-class hospital care to children with orthopedic problems and severe burns, totally free of charge. That's a picture of the Shriners Hospitals. The Shriners combine expert medical care with progressive research and innovative teaching programs, and there's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area. If you know a child the Shriners might be able to help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Daybreak with Dave Elliott.
This story will infuriate people, I think. There's the state Supreme Court in Seattle, Washington, ruled Thursday that a mother violated Washington's privacy law by eavesdropping on her daughter's phone conversation. I think moms should have the right to monitor their kids' phone calls. I'm not that much of a screaming, bleeding heart liberal that I understand the significance of that.
A fresh new way to start the day. Daybreak with Dave Elliott on AM 1240 and 1270. Wink WNOG.
A tip for older drivers from the AAA Foundation for Traffic Safety.
Take a more active role in your driving by scanning the road for potential hazards. Move your head and your eyes. And using your side view mirrors combined with your rear view mirror can keep you informed as to traffic and obstacles all around you.
With a little practice, you'll be more aware of everything around you than you've ever been. And that's the right step toward making an older driver a wiser and safer driver.
For a free brochure on older driver safety, call 1-800-993-7222.
To the nation's number one Democratic talk show host, Guy James.
Yes, indeed. We are back with you here at Wink WNOG. So glad to be along with you this evening. Much to take care of yet on the show today. But, you know, one of the things that I am very happy about is our next guest we're going to have on the program. Do we have Our next guest we're going to have on the program is someone I've been looking forward to talking to for a long time. Perhaps one of the most interesting men you'll ever talk about or read about. It's Dr. John Sperling. He's written a couple of books of great note. One is Rebel with a Cause. It's kind of his life's story. It's fascinating. And the other, the one I just got not too terribly long ago, about a month ago, called The Great Divide, Retro versus Metro America. And I'll tell you something. If you had to spend $1,000 for that book, it would be worth it. I can tell you, every household in America ought to have that book in it. But right now, I'd like to welcome one of America's most successful entrepreneurs, a fascinating man, Mr. Dr. John Sperling. Are you with us, Dr. Sperling?
Yes, I am.
Where are you at today? In Phoenix?
No, I'm in San Francisco.
San Francisco. It's an honor and a pleasure to have you with us on our program. We've been looking forward to for some time now. We wanted to talk with you for a little bit tonight.
Surely.
About one of your causes that you're working very hard on, and we want to talk about the war on drugs.
Oh, that's good.
I know it's a subject dear to your heart. It is to mine as well, and many of our listeners. We've had fabulous feedback when we announced that we were going to talk about this particular subject. I happen to think it's one of the great, well, the war on drugs, one of the great boondoggles there ever been here in this country. What do you think?
Oh, I couldn't agree more.
Why won't the U.S. government follow the successes of some of the other nations around the world regarding drug treatment and the drug problem?
Well, I have to confess that I think it's the insidious impact of religion. Have you ever read a book by Professor Marone of Brown called Hellfire Nation?
No, I'm afraid I haven't.
Oh, it's a wonderful book. It's one of the most depressing books you'll ever read, but and it describes the evangelical demand always to find a sinner, always to find someone who's going to be a scapegoat, and they will seize upon it. They seized upon demon rum. They seized upon slavery. And, of course, everyone turns and says, look, isn't it wonderful that the evangelicals were the driving force to end slavery in America. And that was true, but as soon as the slaves were freed, then the slaves became an enemy.
Yes.
And the whole thing was slaves represented the danger to white women. Slaves were lazy. I mean, the freed slaves were lazy. They were addicted to drugs. And then they go in. Remember back at the turn of the century, it was Reefer Madness?
Oh, I remember. I've seen that film. That's a good one.
The insanity of saying somebody's going to go nuts on marijuana is the height of insanity. And yet, that is the enemy. And it went from prohibition to the prohibition of drugs. One of the reasons I think that prohibition ended and the war on drugs hasn't ended is that there is, almost always have been, a built-in group who find alcohol the drug of choice. And that group is simply so large that the evangelicals eventually had to give up and accept the fact they weren't going to be able to stop the use of alcohol. But the group that use drugs is much smaller, and it has many fewer ceremonies attached to it. I know that the Indians have the peyote cults, and they use hashish and various other things, but they're a very minor part of the whole society. So evangelicals have been able then to maintain the war on drugs, and no matter what you do, they will continue.
Well, it seems like they don't want to pay any attention to reason. I was reading an article recently that said that we lost 390,000 Americans last year to the effects of smoking. We lost another 80 or 90,000 to the effects of alcoholism. And 2,000 to hardcore drugs.
Right.
Why, it makes no sense.
Yes, I realize it makes no sense. But it satisfies a need. And the need is to have an other, to have an enemy, to have some group that they can point to and say, these people are sinful. And so it just so happens that the people that use drugs are the sinful ones, and they don't have enough protection in the rest of the society to be able to stop the drug war.
Makes you wonder how many sinful people they need to beat on at one time. They're working over the gays pretty good right now as well.
That's right.
There's not enough of them to defend themselves either. It's just one thing after another with the evangelicals. Well, Dr. Sperling, it appears we're not going to stop the evangelicals from believing the way they believe. How can we get out from under the effects of them preaching the way they do about this war on drugs?
I puzzled that. We did 21 initiatives, and we won 19 of them in various states. For instance, in Arizona, my home state, it's impossible, or you can't go to prison for the use of drugs unless you go through treatment three times. You have to be a three-time loser. So there are places, Arizona is a place with a very high level of evangelical groups. But if you couch the thing in the proper terms, then you will be able to win reform. And we did the same thing here in California. But then you look at the Christian right, it has a lock on the Congress now, and you aren't going to get any movement there. The Supreme Court has consistently overruled. They're all in favor of states' rights, but as soon as the states are doing something they don't like, then the federal law supersedes state law. And it's on a very selective basis, and the reactionaries on the Supreme Court uphold the cases against the use of medical marijuana in California. They uphold the law, the federal law against the state law.
Well, are you getting any support from any of the leadership of either political party about concerning your, I know you like to use the term medicalization versus criminalization.
Right.
Are you getting any support from any of our political leaders over this?
Oh, there are a lot of people in Congress. Strangely enough, most of them are Democrats, and there are a few who are Republicans, like Bob Barr and the Libertarian Republican, Paul from Texas. But there's a very, very small number, and none of them are in the leadership. Nobody in the leadership will touch drug reform.
Are they afraid of getting hit over the head by the evangelicals and targeted for defeat?
That's right.
My, oh my, oh my, what this country is coming to. You know, how many states, you know, your Proposition 200 you had in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
How many states have got similar initiatives right now?
I don't know, because the legislature in some of the states have overturned them, but we have California, Oregon, Washington, Nevada, Arizona, Colorado, let's see, Maine, and Montana, I think.
It's amazing that that many more of the liberal states haven't.
Well, the reason is that most of the states do not have the initiative process.
Mm.
Therefore, if you don't have the initiative process, the only hope you have is to get it through a legislature. And that's almost impossible.
Yeah, well, in some states it would be probably just pure folly to even try it, like in the Deep South, for example. I don't think, the Deep South, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, South Carolina, it seems like it, well, with their bent toward the conservatism right now, it would be a tough road to hoe. Doctor, what's your motivation in all this?
Oh, I just, I guess it's, I tend to believe that the society should, insofar as possible, leave people alone, and that we should not pursue sanctions against victimless crime. I suppose that's a libertarian view, but I think it's more a liberal view. I just don't think that you should incarcerate and have within the criminal justice system almost half of the black youth, blacks from ages 18 to 25, and the same thing is getting almost equally as outrageous among the Latinos. So here you have a group that you can persecute, and you can get away with it. So we know that the drug laws are racist to the core, because most of the drugs are used by whites, and most of the criminals that are in the slammer for drug offenses are minorities.
Well, most certainly, and it does take its toll on the minority communities. I've read that in at least the federal prison system, 60% of the population of the federal prison system is there as a result of drug convictions.
Mm-hmm.
That's a staggering number.
It is indeed.
We have
more people now, percentage-wise, incarcerated even than the Russians. They were afraid of us, but now we've overtaken the Russians.
We've got our own private gulags here.
That's right. We are among civilized, and I use that term advisedly, nations. We are the ones with the greatest number of people incarcerated. We also have the highest crime rates, highest violence by guns, and yet the Congress and most of these state legislatures are saying we're going to lock them up and put them away and they can just stay there and rot. There's no longer any concept of reform in the criminal justice system. It's pure punishment. It's almost right out of the Old Testament. Eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, etc.
Surely. What about the toll this takes financially on the country? I know there's $60 billion a year spent on this war on drugs, but the cost is so much more than that.
Oh, yeah. For instance, we spend probably $300 billion and goes abroad to purchase drugs. And then, of course, there's the fact that all of those people that are incarcerated, they aren't paying taxes. In fact, we're spending about $35,000 per person to keep them incarcerated. It's a mindless operation, and you look at it and say, why would any sane person do this? And yet you have all of the emotional and philosophical and religious beliefs that keep it going.
Are you for decriminalization of cocaine and marijuana and other drugs?
I think they should be controlled substances, mm-hmm. but I think they should be dispensed in the same way that they dispense alcohol. And certainly we have more alcohol addicts than we have addicts from drugs, and there would be more addicts from drugs. But again, as you said, only about 2,000 of them died this year, whereas alcohol took—I don't remember what your numbers were. But
alcohol was about 80 to 90,000.
80 to 90,000. So there you have an instance where it's almost 50 times more prevalent to have death through alcohol. So the deaths from drug use would increase. But we should make sure that youth don't get a hold of it any more than they get a hold of alcohol. And, of course, that would be compensated for by the fact that literally hundreds of thousands of people would be released from prison.
Well, and also some of them could get gainful employment like they do in Europe. And the other thing is, let's say someone on a hardcore drug habit. I read someplace the DEA said they have to steal the crime that goes along with it. They have to steal $500 a day just to keep their habit going.
That's right.
Think of the cost of that.
That's right. And if they had simply clinics as the Swiss and now the Dutch do. They simply have clinics where these people can receive their hit, as it were, and also receive counseling, and it's whatever it is that is going to help to get them off of drugs. Furthermore, they're now increasingly pharmaceuticals, drugs that have been developed that help break the habit, the addiction habit, more so for hard drugs, as they say, than for alcoholism.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it won't be long until a person can simply go in and within the matter of 24 hours be cleaned, be free of their addiction. But that addiction arises not only from genetic predisposition, but also from psychological problems. And if those psychological problems are not dealt with, they will become addicts again. So there are some people that are simply doomed to be addicts in the society, at least with our current pharmacological ability to deal with it.
Well, even though some people are doomed to be addicts, those people, like you said, if they could get their inexpensive fix every day without having to go out on the streets and steal $500 worth of merchandise or rob people every day, many of those people I've read in Europe are gainfully employed and are able to support a family even though they are still addicts.
Yeah. Oh, there are many, many instances of addicts who are functioning citizens. For instance, among the physicians, particularly in the 19th century, addiction to heroin and to cocaine was widespread among the medical class, and they functioned quite well. It was, they were able to get their drugs without having anyone worrying about them, and it's only recently that that now the physicians are being hounded, as well as the other folks. But because physicians are so valuable, when a physician is identified as an addict, then he or she is taken off and put through some sort of a clinic and put back into their profession. Now, not like a black who's an addict on the street. There's no reason to rehabilitate that person. They just send them off to the slammer.
Shameful. And the average sentence I read somebody says is about 5 years, and at 35, that's $175,000 right there.
Right.
Plus the cost of going through the court system. It's costing right now, with a five-year sentence, it's costing about $500,000 of public money to put one person in jail for 5 years, a drug dealer.
Yep.
What exceptions to the decriminalization have you decided? How about, the kingpins and all that sort of thing?
Well, they would disappear. There might still be illegal drug running, but the same thing, what happened after the prohibition ended? The rum runners all disappeared, right?
Right.
So
right.
Once you take the profit out of it, nobody's going to be bothering with that. It just isn't worth it.
It was a sad day for the rum runners when the prohibition ended.
Right. They were doing a great business.
Oh, sure. And many Americans, well, far more Americans were involved in drinking than anybody had even thought before the prohibition started. Well, that was one of the greatest mistakes in American history, no question about it. And the drug war seems to be going right along with it. How far are you prepared to go with this? You're going to fight this long and hard. I know you've been at it for some time now.
Well, we backed off because with Bush in office, anything that looks like reform is almost impossible. We tried in 2002 and found that we lost every initiative in that. In 2002, so we had to back off. And as you know, Bush has made it very comfortable for the Christian right, and the Christian right has said, "We won the election for you, Mr. Bush, and therefore we want our agenda put into place. And the same thing is true in a lot of state legislatures. So until there's a change in the presidency and in the Congress, I think it's just a waste of money to try to get these reform initiatives passed.
You know, I'm puzzled by the evangelical right, the mix between evangelical right and George Bush. I can't decide whether they're making him dance to that tune or if he wants to dance to that tune.
It's probably a two-way street.
Well, I'm afraid so. And it's something that scares me. I see us going back to the old black pointy hats and the Salem witch trials, the direction we're going with it. It's not the progress.
Well, they had 11 state initiatives for in defense of marriage, and they all passed overwhelmingly.
Yes.
So it's pretty clear that of all of the, you would say, the modern nations, America is by far the most religious. For instance, there are among Republicans, I think, the latest figures showed 60% believe in creationism of some form or another. Even 47% of Democrats believe in creationism. if you look at the Bible is literally true, something like, depending on how it's, the question is worded, somewhere between 50 and 60% of Americans believe that the Bible is literally true. You go to Europe and ask the same questions, and in Great Britain it's 7%, in France it's 11%, and I think it's about 13% in Germany. So that gives you an idea of the difference, the hold that religion has on the two societies, and that's one of the reasons the United States and Europe is drifting apart so fast, is that there's this conflict over religion. And, of course, a lot of the impetus for the war in Iraq was religiously motivated.
Certainly.
These millions of Christians who believe in the end times and the rapture, and that the war in Iraq was one of those steps along the way to Armageddon. And they believe this very,
yes,
very deeply.
Yes. Well, you know, I always wondered about if you did take the Bible literally, and creationism. I always wondered what happened after Noah's Ark. That puzzles me, how you could believe literally in creationism and still believe in what happened on Noah's Ark, that there was two...
Oh, there have been articles showing how much manure there would be created and how many people would have to shovel it out and how much the Ark would have had to have to feed all the animals. It's really quite... It's quite bizarre.
Well, I'm bizarre to the point of two critters of every last living thing on this earth. I don't know. If you don't believe things have evolved, you'd have to think that our ark was far bigger than I could ever think.
Well, it's also a tragedy because if people who believe in creationism are not going to send their children to schools where they're going to be given a sound education and science. So science withers, and as you looked at the data we presented in the Great Divide of the 275 Nobel Prizes that have been given in the United States, 23 of them are from the southern states, what we call the retro states, the red states, and of those, 16 are from one particular medical complex in Tennessee. So you can see that science, for all practical purposes, at a high level, simply does not exist in the red states. And science is going to be the foundation, or is going to be any hope that America will continue to thrive in the coming decades, that already... The Chinese have more patents granted than the United States. That these non-Christian or religious-ridden countries are much more attuned to what is necessary in the coming decades and even centuries. And America is ultimately, or just ineluctably going to be held back and fall back because of the grip that religion has on the country.
Well, to steal an old phrase from somebody else, from General Motors, as science goes, so goes our nation.
Yeah.
And we cannot afford to deprive the children in this country of a good scientific education. It'll be a disaster if we do. Dr. Sperling, I've just got a few moments left before we have to break for the top of the hour. I'd sure love to have you back on again and go into depth on your book, The Great Divide, Retro versus Metro. I told the listeners before you came on that it's a book I'd gladly pay $1,000 for.
That's very kind of you.
It's an amazing. I've never ever seen a publication as interesting as this is. I can't tell you how taken I was with that book, and I'd love to have you back on again to go into some things about that book that I'd love to talk about.
My pleasure, sir.
Thank you so much, Dr. John Sperling, for being with us this evening. It's an honor and a pleasure having you on, and we'll look forward to talking to you again soon.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
You bet. Bye.
There's a man right there I'd love to talk to for about 4 hours on the air. He's an interesting man. We'll talk a little bit more about him after the top of the hour. We're going to break for news now. You're listening to WNOG. WINK 1240 1270 Naples Fort Myers. We'll be back right after the news. Stay tuned.
A Democrat and proud of
Southwest Florida's
guy.
Official news, weather, and traffic station. Wink WNOG.
CBS News. I'm Dave Barrett. 10 years behind bars for abusing Iraqi prisoners. That's the sentence for Army Specialist Charles Grainer.
He's remained calm the whole way through. I mean, there was no emotion. You could not see anything on his face, no sign of disappointment, no sign of anger. He wasn't upset. He stood there and heard the verdict and basically remained emotionless.
Reporter Jay Gormley's in Fort Hood, Texas, where Grainer's attorney, Guy Womack, spoke after the sentencing verdict.
We respect their decision. I think that they gave due deliberation to everything. What I'm concerned about in the way of fairness is that there was so much evidence kept out.
Grainer was convicted of assault and of maltreating Iraqi prisoners and more. Now, CBS News military consultant Jeffrey McCausland says Grainer will likely go to prison at Fort Leavenworth.
It's a pretty rigid place. There's no two ways about it. I mean, this will be far from a fun place. Obviously, the prison guards are school-trained military police.
McCausland is a retired Army colonel and says what Charles Grainer did has cost the U.S. military.
He's made the very difficult task of soldiers, Marines, and Iraq even that much more difficult. Probably encouraged many Iraqis to join the insurgency.
But McCausland says the 10-year sentence also tells U.S. troops that such action against Iraqi prisoners will not be tolerated. About 5,000 residents of Anderson, Indiana are heading home a day after a toxic fire broke out where magnesium is recycled in that town. EPA tests show no hazard now. The fire at the Amacor plant will be left to burn itself out. Not much hope for finding survivors at the avalanche site around Park City, Utah. Up to 5 people may be buried in up to 35 feet of snow near the Canyon Resort. Dave Edmonds is the Summit County Sheriff.
With the amount of snow we're talking about, the density of the snow, the weight of the snow, and just the sheer time that we're talking about here, the likelihood of finding somebody alive in this avalanche is slim to none.
It's still soggy in the Midwest, in Ohio particularly. WOIO-TV reporter Scott McFarlane has checked flooding about an hour south of Cleveland.
3 small cities are now surrounded by a deep ring of murky water. Floods have submerged every road out of town, including parts of Interstate 77. And those roads won't be passable until Thursday. Stacy Porter, one of the thousands who evacuated, says she couldn't stay.
I have a job, and I'm actually concerned for my safety.
The only way to get in and out of these towns is by police lifeboat. Scott McFarlane for CBS News, Cleveland.
NFL playoffs. New York Jets and Pittsburgh Steelers in overtime. Steelers trying to win it. Westwood One's Dave Sims.
From 33 yards, snap. Place the kick. It's off the plane. Distance. Nice ball going. And it is good. And the Pittsburgh Steelers have won it in overtime by the final of 20-17.
They beat the Jets and advance to the AFC Championship. Coming up in the NFC now, St. Louis at Atlanta. This is CBS.
Honey, can you pour me some water?
Yeah, sure.
This year, United Way helped provide over 29,627 prescriptions for the uninsured and gravely ill in Wichita. And it doesn't matter. We called upon 65 pharmacies, 100 social services, and 604 volunteer positions. And it doesn't matter. Together, we helped over 1,623 patients cope with pneumonia, hepatitis, even cancer. And it still doesn't matter. The number of pills and programs doesn't really matter. What matters is each new day they make possible.
How do you feel?
I feel great.
Your United Way investment, magnified by others who invest the United Way, has the real power to bring about the results that matter where you live. What matters? United Way.
The following is a paid commercial announcement. The views and opinions expressed and the advice offered by the host are not necessarily those of Wink WNOG, Fort Myers Broadcasting, Meridian Broadcasting, or any of their affiliate sponsors or assigns. James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. And now, you've heard the right. All that's left is the truth. Guy James.
Yes, indeed. So glad to be with you here on the Guy James Show. Lots going on this week. As always, say hey, and don't everybody forget, this coming Monday is Martin Luther King Day. It certainly is, and going to be a big parade down in Naples starting at noon and a ceremony at Gambier Park immediately following the parade. And all Democrats in Collier County are invited to attend the monthly meeting of the Collier County Democratic Club this Monday, January 17th at 6 p.m. at the Naples Bath and Tennis Club on Airport Road. All members and non-members, bring a couple of friends along. There's going to be free refreshments, and the featured speaker is going to be president of the Collier County NAACP, Linda Sanders. She's going to be the featured speaker, and you will all enjoy that. So be sure and get in on that. If you want information on the Collier County Democratic activities, log on to www.thecollierdemocrats.org. I want to say hello this evening to all my friends down at the Bentley Village Turtles Club. Met with those fellows this past Wednesday, I guess it was, and had a lively meeting and a great time talking to those folks. I tell you, you talk about a bunch of well-educated, on-the-ball people, the Bentley Village Turtle Club. It's a great group. So we'll talk a little bit more about donors and that sort of thing a little later on in the program. Let's give you some phone numbers. You want to call in 263-6570 in Collier County, 479-5540 here in Lee County. And for all of our friends on the Internet, 888-602-7500, 7501, 7502, 03, or 04. That'll get you in the studio and on the show. www.theguyjamesshow. And as always, we want to let you know this is a listener-funded show. And if you want to go to our website and throw couple of bucks our way to keep the program on the air, we'd certainly appreciate it. Try and give you some good programming with great guests. You know, there's going to be a big week coming up this week. We got MLK Day on Monday, and I do want to remind everybody to take time to reflect, stop a little while in your busy life, and take a look back and remind yourself of what this Martin Luther King Day is all about. There's a man, if it had been plucked out of that particular period of history, I don't know where we'd be right now. I really don't. He was, he's a fascinating man. He was an important man. He was a man with a mission, and he followed that mission all the way until his untimely death. And how many people do you know that has the dedication that Martin Luther King had? Not too many, I'm afraid. We need more folks like him. Martin Luther King was a human individual. He had warts and all, just like every last one of us do. He had his faults. He had his good points, but he was a courageous, brave man who believed in what he was doing. And every last person in the United States owes Martin Luther King a great debt. Because if racism can ever be stopped in this country, Stop and think of the heights we can achieve in education and the sociological things that take place if racism would just go by the wayside. You and I all know, we all know that racism still exists in many places in this country. It exists in the minds and hearts of so many people. And if over time, I know, even though it's been a long time since Dr. King started his mission, it's something that has to stop, it's something that eventually will stop, and the sooner the better, so America can become a much better place and is a much better place today because of Martin Luther King, most definitely. You know, I think we've finally arrived with this, and I'm going to get to the phones in just a moment or two, so hang on there, everybody's on the phone. With this inauguration or coronation, whatever you want to call it, we've finally come to the point where I always thought we would arrive. From Bush's first moments in the White House, I predicted, and a lot of you know this, we would get here to this point, and it's now obvious that I was right all along. I knew the Bushes had no regard for the American people, nor anyone else for that matter. I always knew that they were an administration full of the most perfect sociopaths imaginable. You know, not a thought for another human being amongst them. Not a thought. Not a care as to what the voting public thinks about anything. The voters foolish enough to fall for their propaganda. Well, I'm not going to get into name-calling tonight, but they were fooled because they were used. They were used for their votes and then cast aside like yesterday's garbage. You and I know that. You seniors that voted for Bush know that right now, don't you? What's going on with the Social Security thing? Where do you see that plan rolled out completely? You know, if there's even one person in this country who can justify the absurd cost of Bush's big party next week, is there one? Can any of you give us a call and justify the cost of this, what is it, $40 million plus who knows how many more million dollars coming out for security out of the Homeland Security? Can any thinking person possibly defend this extravagance, this obscene display of wretched excess? I think not. I ask any of my Republican listeners right now, call in and give me your take on this. I want to know if the real compassionate conservatives are behind Bush on this one. I want to know that with all that's going on in this world right now, can you really say that Bush should spend $40 million bucks plus millions more out of the Homeland Security Fund for protection during this charade, or should I say parade, for the Republican fat cats? But forget the cost. It's another case of Bush shaming America. We've got soldiers dying almost every day in Iraq fighting for who knows what. Certainly not for what we were initially told we were invading for. Certainly not for establishing a democracy in Iraq, because we have plenty of clues already that the democracy that the Iraqis understand and our democracy are two different things. Or are they? Alawi paid a bunch of journalists $100 apiece the other day. Kind of like the Armstrong-Williams deal. And Alawi took the law into his own hands a while back and shot a few prisoners in the back of the head in a police station without a trial. Kind of like Bush is holding prisoners without a trial. And they're going to hold elections where a bunch of people won't be represented because of not getting to vote. Kind of like what happened here in this country in 2000 and 2004. So who knows what's going to happen, but this inauguration, hey, and I do want to warn some of you, I don't think that I've read any place where any local kids are going to be in the inauguration parade. Usually at the local high schools in the inauguration parade or any of those big parades, they usually put it in the newspaper. And I haven't seen any mention that any of our local bands are going to be in it. And thank God that none of your kids are going to be in the inauguration parade, because they could get killed really easily, shot by the sharpshooters. Have you read about this? Thousands of police officers and military personnel are being brought to Washington from around the country, from all over the country, for this. It's going to be a four-day event. They're going to have sharpshooters on the roofs. Bomb-sniffing dogs are going to be on the streets. They're going to have electronic sensors that detect chemical and biological weapons. The anti-abortion protesters have been warned to leave their crosses at home. But get this. parade performers, this is out of the Boston Globe, parade performers will have security escorts to the bathroom. And they've been ordered, I love this one. Remember when I tell you this next one, folks, we're living in the United States of America, or what's left of it. They've been ordered, these are the people in the parade now, the kids, the floats, all this stuff in the parade. They've been ordered not to look directly at President Bush or make any sudden movements while passing the reviewing stand. So suppose your band is walking by and you got your little Sally, the baton twirler, and your little Johnny's playing the trumpet in the band, and he happens to trip over the guy next to him. He falls down. That's a sudden move. He ends up looking up the boot. They're going to blow his head off? Warned not to look directly at President Bush or make any sudden movements while passing the reviewing stand. I tell ya, I don't know if I've ever heard anything so crazy. You know, I really don't. My God, I read about things like this and I think, is this for real? And of course we got this list out of some of the folks I thought you might be interested in hearing that the kind of money they donated for this inaugural, for this obscenity of an inaugural that we're having, what is it, Thursday? Al Hoffman from right here in Fort Myers. Al, are you listening? Al, $100,000 to the, $100,000. Al Hoffman, he's a builder, you know, I think he's a builder, gave $100,000 to the inauguration ceremony. Al, my God, you've got too much money, man, you really do. $100,000. Bank of America, $250,000. Blue Cross Blue Shield of Florida. Now, there's a good use of your premiums, don't you think? Blue Cross Blue Shield, you're spending your hard-earned bucks. If you're working at Walmart or some way and you got to pay most of your own hospitalization to Blue Cross Blue Shield, and they give $100,000 to the inauguration. Boone Pickens. Boone Pickens. You remember Boone Pickens, the old green mailer? $250,000. Oh my, here's somebody from the pharmaceutical industry. Who would ever guess? Bristol Myers and Squibb, $250,000. Carl Lindner of Cincinnati, you all remember Carl, $250,000. And oh, what a surprise. Chevron, Texaco, $250,000. Let's see, they're in the, the oil business. Exxon, $250,000. Hunt Consolidated of Dallas, Texas. Oh, might they be in the oil business too? $250,000. Thank you very much. Let's see who else here. Marriott. Remember that next time you go hunting for a hotel, all my Democratic friends. $250,000. Northrop Grumman. Oh, let's see. Defense Contracts. $100,000. Oh, and another one, Occidental Petroleum Corporation, $250,000. I'll never drink another Pepsi-Cola in my life. They gave $100,000. I've already boycotted Pepsi-Cola for about 30 years now, and I'm not about to change anyway. I'll tell you about that sometime. Home Depot, Washington, D.C., $250,000. The Ritz-Carlton Hotel, hell, when you charge $1,000 a night for a room, why not? $250,000. United Parcel, $250,000. Tyson Chicken, $100,000. Well, we want to thank all those very generous folks for helping the poor president out with his inauguration. My, oh my. You know, can it get any crazier? Let's go to John in Cape Coral. Hi, John.
Excuse me, I'm not sure I quite understand you. Can I ask a question?
Oh, here you go.
Was all this money for the inauguration or for this tsunami relief that President Bush, that people asked them to sacrifice for?
Well, one would think the latter, wouldn't one? But
I thought that's what you were saying.
No, sadly, no.
Wasn't that what Mr. Bush said we should do? Didn't I hear him with his own lips say that?
Well, they do have to have their party, John, and I guess
I brought this up last week, if you recall. So yeah. I wasn't going to call you and say anything until you got on the topic, and I think you know my feelings on it.
I couldn't help it.
Obscene is not the word.
That's right.
That's too nice a word for this. And if you used the four-letter words, I'd be off the air. But this, you know, where does this fit in with these evangelicals that you were talking about before?
Well, do you suppose any of them will be there?
I don't know, but there was, you know, where's the sacrifice? Where's the sacrifice for the tsunami victims? Where's the sacrifice for the troops that are fighting that don't have enough armor, don't have enough supplies, and are complaining?
Well, there's two groups that are sacrificing. Of course, just the parents of those kids and all of our kids who are going to pay the bill years from now.
I don't know. I mean, I guess I don't fit into this morality, so I apologize.
But you, according to the screen here, you wanted to talk about something very
moral, though. You had mentioned, I think, a gentleman by the name Armstrong Williams last week.
Ah,
I thought, you know, you started me thinking, but I didn't comment on it last week, and I thought, I wonder if I could comment on it this week.
Well, you're most welcome.
Because you mentioned the No Child Left Behind, and I've been spending a lifetime in the field of education. And still I'm connected to a lot of activities with the local school board here in Lee County.
Mm-hmm.
And do some teaching presently in a classroom.
Yes, sir.
And this No Child Left Behind has changed education in a lot of ways. And I talk to people not only here in the state of Florida, but I have friends elsewhere in the country, particularly in New York where I came from. And the same reaction up there. It's the teaching is no longer what it was before. Before that, you had this No Child Left Behind. The effort was to do creative teaching and motivate children. Today it is, and particularly here in the state of Florida, there's a four-letter word, which I guess I'm allowed to use on the radio, though it shouldn't be, and it's called FCAT.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with that?
Sure.
Maybe some of your listeners across the country aren't, but I know they have similar such programs in other states with similar initials. And it's all with testing. And the way we do it, we hold everybody accountable for raising test scores. Teachers, they get additional pay if the test scores are up. Schools get additional pay. Administrators, everybody looks to test scores. You're an A school or a B school or a C school, depending on test scores. So for a good part of the school year, here in Florida through March, all the teaching is devoted to the teaching to the test so that children can pass this FCAT test. Well, you can't be creative if you're drilling children for a test.
Certainly not.
And all I hear educators tell me, we can be creative anyway, and we can bring the scores up if you're good to do good teaching. But then again, everybody looks to this test, because if you don't get the scores up, you lose your job.
John, let me ask you a question. Who are the teachers you remember from school? Are they the ones that taught it by the book or out of the book? Or are they the ones that had their own style and their own way of educating? They're the ones I remember.
Well, I think you need to look at the results, and this again is cross-country. What happens to the youngsters who do this? We get the scores up. There's no question we're getting scores up. So you're getting certain basics across. But what is lost in the process? And I think you're hitting a key, Guy. What is lost in the process is the motivation, and that's the key word, motivation, the interest of the youngster in school. You know, if you drill kids and you drill them and you drill them for a test, they will learn and they will increase the scores.
Most definitely.
I mean, sometimes you have to cheat, and that was done in Texas, too. That's been brought out.
Oh.
I'm not supposed to say that.
It was rampant in Texas.
You know, and we know who was governor of Texas.
Well, and his secretary of education, Mr. Rod Page, the proud administrator of the schools of Houston, got that job because of those test scores. Turns out they were phony. My goodness.
Well, you know, it's one way of getting test scores up. And if that becomes the end in itself, one way or the other, we get test scores up. If jobs depend upon it, you get the test scores up, and that happens.
Sure.
And we lose kids in the process.
Oh, yes.
And we're losing minority kids in the process, by the way.
Very
you know, you're talking about Martin Luther King, but we're losing those kids in the process. And I think there's no child, you know, I'm not against testing, and I want to say that very clear. I think testing should be there to evaluate, to know where the youngster is at, so you can improve your teaching. But I think when you hamstring teachers to these tests, and that becomes the driving force and the only driving force, you're losing all the things that really make education work.
Absolutely. Teach a kid how to think and then test him.
Well, that is what's lost and No Child Left Behind.
Certainly.
And that's lost. You see, the test scores have become not educational but political. And the politics is driving the education. Had to make the politicians are good. Oh, we're improving education. And Jeb Bush is doing it here in the state of Florida. George W. is doing it in the United States. And everything looks good. But, you know, it is really, if you ask teachers, they are not for this. But then nobody wants to listen to teachers because they're the ones dealing with children in the classroom.
Who wants to go into a classroom and be a teacher and be a robot?
Because we don't pay teachers either, you know.
That's a fact.
I mean, there's the other driving force in our society. And this is not just George W. Bush, but this is a gripe of mine. But where's the financial reward? Is it in education to become a teacher? Or is it to become a ball player, maybe a ball player on steroids, or an actor, or an actress, a rap star? You know, where's the motivation?
Teachers, and you know, a lot of people would argue with me, I would pay my teacher more than my doctor. My teacher, that teach my kids and teach the kids in this country, to me, are the most important people that there are in this country working at a job. Teachers, that comes first.
We give that lip service.
Well, we shouldn't.
And we are, in the meantime, wrapping everything up in this world of testing and what we call accountability. And we're taking the joy out of teaching, the joy out of learning, and we're making the schools unhappy places. And if you take all the violence in the schools, all the dropout rates, all the things that don't work, the statistics look that if you look at the statistic, the scores are up, but at what price?
Well, that's right. They've all learned how to take a test. I don't know what good that's going to do them in life.
And by the way, sometimes we're teaching things, and one of the things that I've talked to people, we're teaching things in the curriculum that none of us ever use. I do some substitute teaching. Some of the stuff that I looked and I'm working particularly in the middle schools, there are things that we're teaching that the only time that I will use is when I'm covering a class in the middle school. Because we're teaching the kids the same things. We're not teaching them the practical skills of life. And we're not teaching any of the hands-on skills that we used to teach, you know, that used to motivate kids. Teaching is done out of textbooks, workbooks, worksheets, and the kids are bored to death. And I think that's what's wrong with education, and that part of it has to be attributed to No Child Left Behind.
But, John, no child is being left behind. They're getting those test scores and making Mr. Bush look real good, he thinks.
Well, I let's put it this way to you. I appreciate the time on your show. By the way, I have a question for you. One of the things at the top of the hour, I heard a disclaimer that the station takes no responsibility for the content of this show.
That's right.
Then I hear the right-wing talk shows. Do they run the same disclaimer? And if so, if not, why not?
Well, you know, John, we could talk for hours about that subject. Seems the right-wingers can... Well, that's another show.
Well, I just thought I'd bring up things which probably... I hope you'll let me on next week to do.
You're a troublemaker, John.
Well, that I've been known for all my life, but I wanted to raise these questions. But, you know, when you have to pay $240,000 for a man to advertise a program which is questionable in its working, especially at the time of Martin Luther King, I think there are questions to be raised.
Absolutely, John. Thank you.
Thank you for the time.
888-602-7500, 7501-02-0304, 479-5540 here in Lee County. Let's go to Alice in Humboldt. Hi, Alice.
Mm-hmm.
Are you with
this
us, Alice?
Is Alice.
Hi, Alice.
Yeah. How are you guys?
Well, good. What's on your mind tonight, Alice?
Do you think the fact that this war is proving very profitable for some, do you think that it is just a coincidence? There's Halliburton.
Absolutely
the
not.
GE, Pactel, and Cheney.
Not a coincidence at all.
They're making money.
You know, people would call you and I cynical for thinking that, Alice, but I don't think I don't think you can arrive at any other conclusion.
Have a good day.
Thank you, Alice.
That last talker was something else. Okay.
Thanks for your call.
We can laugh about that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, dear.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
Well, you know, this Armstrong-Williams thing, the more I got to thinking about this, did you notice right after the Armstrong-Williams things broke that we started talking about Nan Rather again all of a sudden? How much more transparent can the whole thing be? Look, ladies and gentlemen, the right-wingers are paying people. They're paying pundits to say what they want to say. They're paying them to go out and solicit other black broadcasters to interview Rod Paige. They're paying him to sell this No Child Left Behind. Hey, Dan Rather. Look over here, it's Dan Rather. Don't pay attention to Armstrong Williams. Oh, my God. I laugh, but it's tragic. It really is. Our newsmen. I don't know how many of you saw Armstrong Williams on Crossfire the other day. But here we've got a guy who I've always admired, Paul Begala, threw him a couple of softballs. Should have nailed this guy to the wall. Threw him a few softballs, and, of course, Robert Novak also just, too bad you got caught up in this whole thing. What kind of pundits do we have? What kind of broadcaster do we have now to let a guy like Armstrong Williams on the show and too bad, so sorry. Hey, we're going to pause for a break at the bottom of the hour. You're listening to the Guy James Show, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Don't go anywhere.
The Guy James Show.
News, weather, and traffic station.
Wink WNOG.
One in four adults has high blood pressure. If you're one of them and you have a cold, Coracetin HBP has surprising news for you. The American Heart Association recognizes that decongestants found in many leading cold medicines can raise your blood pressure and interfere with blood pressure medication. So why risk it? Only decongestant-free Coracetin HBP provides a line of safe, powerful cold and flu medication specially formulated for people with high blood pressure. So make a safe choice. Coracetin HBP. Use as directed.
Emerging research suggests you consume substantial quantities of tomatoes every day to reduce your risk of cancer.
Five tomatoes every day?
To get your daily dose, try Like Omega.
Day after day.
All the power of five whole tomatoes in one little pill. With lycopene and all the other antioxidants found naturally in the tomato.
You're talking 152 tomatoes a month?
The power of five tomatoes in one little pill.
That's 1,825 tomatoes a year.
Look for Vitamin Shop brand lycopene with Lycomato in your local vitamin shop.
When they put caffeine in soft drinks, where do they get the caffeine? Well, often from the people who make decaf coffee.
People who are decaffeinating coffee have big sacks of powdered caffeine sitting around, so they sell it down the street to the pop bottler.
T.R. Reid is the author of the cover story in the January 2005 issue of National Geographic called Why We Love Caffeine. T.R. says caffeine occurs naturally in about 100 different plants, and people all over the world have been hooked on the caffeine in those plants for thousands of years.
There are two good things about this particular addictive drug. One is it's really hard to overdose, because if you drink too much, you get so jiggly and nervous that you just kind of stop automatically. And the other thing is, unlike other psychoactive addictive drugs, caffeine washes out of your system pretty completely in just a few days.
And some would argue that the Industrial Revolution was fueled by caffeine.
Coffee, tea, and hot chocolate became common drinks in Europe right at the time, we're talking 1850, when the Industrial Revolution was taking place. And the argument is that when people change their daily rhythm from getting up with the sun and working on the farm to getting up to an alarm clock and going to work in a factory, they needed the jolt of caffeine to push them on to a regular schedule independent of the sun's rhythm. So caffeine made the modern world possible. That's the argument.
At somethingyoushouldknow.net, I'm Mike Carruthers, and that's Something You Should Know.
Hello, Mrs. Johnson. Let's see, before we close on your mortgage loan, I want to make sure you remember Mike.
Hello.
And as you know, he's African-American like you, so you can trust him.
And that's important, because here's the low monthly payment and interest rate you were promised, and
And here's where it triples. Plus, we buried a balloon payment in there, so you'll need another loan just to pay that off.
Another loan?
But we'll keep giving you loans.
Until we eventually take all the equity you had in your house, leaving you with absolutely nothing.
What?
But don't worry. We're going to sell you credit life insurance. You don't really need it, but we sell it at 5 times the cost.
Which puts a ton of cash in our pockets.
Wait, whoa. Don't get up. You look nervous.
Ooh, we better hurry up and get you to sign. Or if you don't, I can pretend to ruin your credit with one phone call.
Predatory lenders are never this easy to spot. Call us at 866-222-FAIR and protect yourself with the facts. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Fair Housing Alliance and the Ad Council.
Gridlock is becoming a way of life in Southwest Florida.
I got a crash Summerlin Road.
And that's why you count on Wink WNOG for up-to-the-minute traffic updates throughout your weekday.
A bit of a backup on Pine Ridge.
We can't stop traffic snarls, but we can tell you where they are when you need to know.
Between Livingston and I-75.
Every 10 minutes from sunup to sundown, no one gives you more traffic updates more often. No one. Your traffic station, AM 1240 and 1270. Wink WNOG. Your weekend station, Wink WNOG.
You've heard the right. Now all that's left is the truth. Guy James.
Back with you with the Guy James Show, 888-602-7500, 7501, 02, 03, and 04. You got that? 479-5540. Where's all our right-wing friends? I don't know. Do they go out and party this time of night? You know, we changed the hours over the show to 7 to 10, and I don't think our right-wing friends came along with us. Kind of miss them. A little insanity now and then is a good thing for radio, and, you know, it's hard having just level-headed people on all the time. But, you know, that's how it is. 888-602-7500, 7501, 02, 03, 04, 479-5540 in Lee County, 263-6570. In Collier County. Love to hear from you. Let's go to the phones. We got Eric in Vermont. Hi, Eric.
Hi, Guy. How you doing?
Great.
Really cold up here. First of all, I'd like to...
How cold is it, Eric?
Well, I can't say this on the air, but it's colder whatever. It's
okay.
It's about in the single digits.
Were you referring to witches or what?
Yeah, something like
that. All right.
Yes. first of all, I'd like to say happy birthday to Martin Luther King, born January 15th in 1929.
My goodness. The man would only be 75 years old if he's still alive. My goodness.
Great man.
Yes.
Then I'd like to get into the Soros group, and I haven't really done enough research on this completely, or even close to that, but there was an article that was on the financialtimes.com, which was published indicating that Soros and some of his other billionaire philanthropic friends wish to get into a type of think tank for developing progressive political ideas to counter the conservative ascendancy which we are experiencing in this country at this time. I have some ideas on that. Do you have some interest in that subject?
Oh, certainly. Oh, certainly I do. What are your ideas?
Well, I think one of the things that first hit me on that was to have some sort of fund set up basically to recover what we sort of left all of us, adults included, behind in terms of our education, in terms of our civics class, in terms of viewing the media and being critically analytical of what we hear and see and watch on the media. I think that's really very critically important for democracy, not dependent upon whether you're Republican, Democrat, liberal, whatever. I think it's really important that we have a more sophisticated voter in this country, an electorate that is more tuned in to what they missed in their high school civics course. I can remember my professor, we had Mao Zedong's Little Red Bible back in 1968, and it was a civics course. I mean, he wasn't teaching any propaganda. He was educating what this guy was doing over there so that we would know. We also had situations where, for example, take Time, Newsweek, U.S. News World Report, which were at that time pretty much three different perspectives. Or you watch ABC, NBC, and CBS on differing nights and so on and so forth for the media aspect of it. I think it's really important that some of the ideas that he could be getting into the country would be to have the voter know what their rights are when they go up to the poll, know a lot of things about state, county rules, regulations, provisional ballots, and so on and so forth. And I think what my recommendation would be, which is something I would like to write up, would be to take some of that money and just make a national canvas and educate in seminar type of things, free sign-up, community-based seminars all throughout the country, no charge, and that would be something that could be promoted through his idea. Am I sort of making myself semi-clear on that?
Yes, you are. And you know, bingo, I think you've hit the nail square on the head. And a good civics lesson for every man, woman, and child in this country would be a great thing. You know, we've talked ad nauseum about voters who go to the polls without a clue, going and voting without going and voting with emotion instead of their intellect. It's sad where we're at today.
Well, anyway, I really didn't have much more. I thought your guest earlier this evening, Dr. Sperling, was very interesting. I'm sure you could go a lot more in the 4 hours that you were mentioning.
Oh yeah.
Extremely interesting man. Can't say I agree with him on everything. Can't say I disagree with him on anything, but certainly a very intelligent and knowledgeable person, and I enjoyed your interview with him. And
he's a man who can...
Thank you very much for being online still, and I'm up here in Vermont, but still listening to you.
Thank you, Eric. Good to hear from you. Dr. Soros is a man who will make you think, and I like people that will make you sit back and go, wait a minute, let's talk this over, let's think about it. He's a man I like to... like to talk about some more. I'm going to go to Tom in Cape Coral. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
What's up with you, Tom?
I tuned in the middle of a conversation, so I don't know whether I had the full gist of it or not, but it regarded the gentleman talking about No Child Left Behind,
mm-hmm.
and complaining, as I understood what he said. Now, maybe I didn't catch everything, but that he seemed to be opposed to the testing and was blaming the Bush brothers, the president and the governor, for the program and standing behind it and everything.
Well, no, he wasn't opposed to the testing. He wasn't opposed to the testing at all. He was opposed to the testing be the end-all, be-all for the thing that they have made it. The teachers nowadays are teaching kids to take the test and little else, and that's what he's objecting to.
Okay. My position, for whatever it's worth, I am relatively well educated. I have a master's degree from the Wharton School, my cousin many, many years ago was president of the NEA, and that's 30 or 40 years ago, I guess, or something like that, but it seems to me that if you look at the failure of our system to educate and to resolve the problems of inner cities, the problems of suburbs, or the problems of anywhere in terms of educating our children, then testing would be a good start. It may not be flawless, but it is a good start to evaluate the capacity of each of these students, because I look at the you know, generations, if you will, that have been passed by without resolving the problem of education. We put people out in the streets. They can't do mathematics, they can't do basic, you know, English, if you will, or other basic skills, which makes them less likely to be employable. So testing is a good thing. When I was in school, I'm retired now, but when I was in school, some students were held back, if you will.
Oh, sure.
And if you hold somebody back, but you also give them the olive branch to enable them to learn the basic skills to be employable. in our country to do well for themselves and their family and for their future, I think those are good things. And I think
I don't think anybody disagrees that we need the testing. I mean, there's no question about that. It's just that they've gone way overboard. And I've talked to several teachers as well, besides John, that say they spend all of their time in each semester or 6-week period, whatever it is they're using in a particular state and school, all of it to teach for the testing, and that's just that's the wrong way to go. I agree with you that we need to test to find out the capabilities and so forth and the shortcomings. But are you leaning toward the fact that it's the state and public schools that are just wrong? And you want to go to some sort of a voucher system to the private schools and the charter schools?
No.
Okay.
No, I disagree with that. I'm I guess you would call me a Republican. I voted for Kennedy, and I voted, I vote my conscience, if you will. But with regard to schools, no, I do not agree with the voucher system. I went through the public school system, and I think that's where our effort should be. That's what we should fix. I'm frankly opposed to the voucher system.
Tom, I couldn't agree more with you on that, most certainly. I got a good... I mean, look at me. I'm a product of a public school making millions and millions of dollars here in the... Well, all except for the millions of dollars. But I got a great education in a public school, and so did my children, and most of the people I know got a great public education. You know, I think the public schools have taken a bad rap in many cases. Not that they don't need some improvement, because they do. We've slipped in some areas.
They have, but here's my objection. My objection is not to say I don't like what I'm in favor of testing and I want to go to the voucher system. My objection is that we have failed to provide and to take care of our young citizens of this country, and we have done that for several generations. I grew up in a relatively, it was a middle class type area. People who grow up in a, let's say, a ghetto situation or something, they're behind the eight ball, or they've got two strikes against them or something. It's just more difficult, and they deserve to have the same chance that I had, that you had, and if, testing is an approach to provide this, if it doesn't work, then rather than just being critical of testing, what's the alternative that's going to work? Because what we were doing wasn't working. Whatever the teachers were teaching or attempting to teach wasn't working well. It's not a simple answer type thing, but it is the just tearing down the solution or the new solution is not a good solution. If we know what we were doing didn't work, if you don't like what we're doing now, then what's the alternative?
Well, I think one of the alternatives is, and forgive me, all you teachers out there, I certainly don't mean all of you, I do mean some of you, I think in many cases testing the teachers would be an even better idea. I think I've seen over the years, and boy, the NEA people are going to let me have it over this, but I've seen some slippage, I think, over the years in the dedication in a couple of school systems that I know of. I don't think we've had the dedication in many cases that we used to have. And again, with the testing, I've hated to see that some of our really great teachers, some of our really, really great teachers have been neutralized by the testing system. They're no longer allowed to go in and use their style and their good sense in the classroom that they did before. Instead, they're just teaching this standardized test. And that's unfortunate. Tom, thank you so much for calling the program. It's interesting to hear your views. We agree on very much of it. We're not that far apart.
Well, thank you, and thank you for having me.
Thank you.
God bless you.
Let's go on over to Bill in Fort Myers. Hi, Bill.
Hey, Guy. I'm enjoying the program tonight. You make it sound easy, so that means you're really good at it.
Oh. And, get out of town.
You know who I admire is this spokesman for the president. What is his name? Scott?
Oh, man.
Well, you'll think of it in a minute, but...
McClellan.
Yeah. Have you noticed lately... You know, he is a very polished man, and he's got to come in there and try to make sense out of what that president's saying. And lately, he hasn't been pronouncing ing. He, instead of going, he says going. I think somebody has told him to try to reduce the contrast between him who can actually communicate and somebody else that tortures the language. I believe he's been told to try to countrify his speech a little.
And I thought I was cynical? Bill, you've outdone yourself.
I'm sorry.
You know, Bill, did you see that? You know, I'm so glad you brought that up. Did
right.
you see that interview the other day when they had McClellan on and the press briefing and they started asking him about that Iraq survey group?
Oh, no, I didn't, because I can only take so much of him, but go ahead.
It was priceless. It was, I got to give it to McClellan. I give it to McClellan. He's the greatest. He is the greatest at sloughing off a question of anybody I have ever seen. Let me look. Don't intrude on your time here. I'm not going to take your time.
Okay.
I wonder, let's see here. Okay, some reporter asked a question. The fact that the Iraq survey group, you know, this is the group that's hunting for the weapons.
Right.
That didn't find them. The reporter says the fact that the Iraq survey group has now folded up its field operations, can you explain to us if there's any sense of embarrassment or lack of comfort, how's that, about the fact that after 2 years of looking, these people found nothing that the president and others assured us they would find? And McClellan says, I think the president already talked about this last October in response to the comprehensive report that was released by Charles Dofer. And, you know, he went on and on. They asked him 10 times about this thing, and he just blew them off every time with a smile.
Well, he's smooth. There's no getting around that. But the thing that, you know, years ago, Newt Gingrich came on the air and said that he wanted Social Security to die on the vine, and Rush Limbaugh denied that for years, even though it's on tape. And you know who Larry Kudlow is?
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I admire him because at least he's a conservative that tells it like it is. And he was asked what he expected out of this second term, and he said, and I'm paraphrasing, I'm trying to get as close as I can, he said that we would get tort reform and Social Security will go down. That's his quote. Social Security will go down. So every time the president comes out and starts talking about Social Security, and he's got that big sign right behind him that says strengthening Social Security.
Oh, boy.
He is trying to divide the old from the young, and when I hope the conservatives can still get in tonight, and when they say it's all going to be voluntary, and the benefits are going to be cut from one-third to one-half for everybody, not just the ones that volunteer for it, and I think it's something to be concerned about.
It's more they're governing with fear.
Well, the other thing is I am very upset with the news media that are letting this White House get away. And now it's been proven that all this thing about the torture in Iraq came directly out of the White House from the neocons. And they sit there and watch one enlisted man after another go to prison. And did you see the picture of that Private English, the young lady, she's
mm-hmm.
pregnant?
Yep.
She's going to prison. Her life is ruined. Her reputation is ruined. Yes, she might have made mistakes. But is that the new definition of what macho is, to be a neocon around the president and do these things and then watch these enlisted people take the rap for you? Is that what it means to be a macho?
Bill, doesn't it seem strange? You would think that the neocons, you would think the people that voted for Bush would step back from this administration for a moment and let us ask one question. I know it's a question you would ask, and it's a question I would ask of them. Can you tell me any place where anybody has taken any blame whatsoever for anything? One
nope.
time. Give me one time where somebody like John Kennedy did way back, it's my fault to bay the pigs, or Harry Truman,
right.
the Bucks. One instance, just one. That's all I'm asking for, but it's not there.
And I've got a question for the conservatives that are listening, and I know you're out there. How do you feel about this president who is now going to take all the illegal aliens in this country who have just completely destroyed the labor effort in this country? And I have nothing against anybody. I love all people, including the Mexicans and all the rest. But why are you going to sit back and watch all of these illegal immigrants be legalized by this president, you're going to sit back and let that happen? You call yourself a conservative? I'm ashamed of you, too.
Well, he's, I don't know what he is. I really just don't know what he is. I can't decide. I know I'm not real impressed, but
Rush Limbaugh tried to cut down Bill Clinton for doing for Social Security. Bill Clinton paid down the national debt by the billion. Two full years, he took nothing from Social Security, and Rush Limbaugh is going to compare that record to this guy who wants to add $2 trillion to our credit card so our grandchildren can pay for it and think that's good. Give me a break, Rush Limbaugh. You must be on the wrong medication.
Oh, I've been wondering a couple of times. I've heard him lately if he's not still on the medication. Have you heard every once in a while we just starts talking some doggone patch, you can't understand a thing he's saying, and he just starts laughing uncontrollably. Yeah. I think, I know a friend that's taken Oxycontin for a long, long time.
Right.
Under medical orders. And he knows the symptoms, and he swears that Limbaugh is still doing
I wouldn't
doing
be surprised, but thanks for a good show, guy, and don't get discouraged. The cycle will change. The Democrats will come back at some point.
I believe it to my very soul.
Thank you, guy.
Thank you, Bill. My goodness. 888-602-7500, 7501, 02, 03, and 04. We have lots to talk about during the program yet, and I do hope you'll give us a call, 479-5540. Hey, by the way, talking earlier, let me see here. MetroVSRetro.org. Retro. RetroVSMetro.org. Check that out on that book, Metro versus Retro America. A great website, by the way. It's got some very, very interesting things on there. I think that we've got one of our dear friends on the phone here right now. Got through all the falderall on the telephone, and I think this is Amanda in Georgia. Amanda, how are you?
Hello, Guy. I'm making it.
Well, it's wonderful to hear from you.
Good hearing from you. I've just about had a nervous breakdown over the past 2 months, but I'm doing better.
That's good to hear.
Good. For all the people out there who don't know who Guy James is, let me assure you, he is one of the dearest people in the world. And I have something to say. Guy, you remember when the sunset, when the law passed on the assault rifles ban?
Certainly, when they let it expire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For the people who don't know, I don't have a problem with hunting guns. I don't have people who want to go out and shoot a deer. I don't have a problem with that. But since that law has went out the window, crime has gone up so terribly bad. I mean violent crime. Even though they report on the news that it hasn't. When it touches your own family, and there's a murder in your own family, and I just learned today at the Waffle House, one of the waitresses was shot three times in the face, right in a small town. And then a week ago, there was another murder. We're talking about suburbs. We're talking about people walking around with guns that really have no business with guns.
It's no longer just the inner city, is it?
No. No, it isn't. And I think it's terrible. I mean, I think that until we get a handle on some of these people who are...
I absolutely agree, Amanda. I mean, here's Amanda and here's Guy James. We don't want to take people's guns away.
No.
You know, they use that as a straw man on us all the time about how the Democrats want to take your guns. No, not at all. I'm a country boy. Everybody, I wasn't, but lots of people in my neighborhood were hunters. They go out and shoot rabbit and pheasant and deer, and that's perfectly fine with me. I know some of you don't agree with me on that, but that's fine. But let's face it, folks, some of these guns that they've got nowadays, it's absurd that some of the guns are in the hands of some of these people. And
yeah, and I have something I want to say to my fellow viewers out there. I tried to reach out to the other side, and I probably went about it the wrong way. And if I'm not sure everybody wants to reach across the aisle, and I'm not sure everybody wants to reach back.
Mm.
You know, we are truly divided. This is truly a divided nation.
Oh.
And for the past, 2 months, I've really had to stop and search my soul and think, golly, people need to try and get along, because in a paper, your life can be gone. And then I really got to thinking about those weapons. And the more I hear every day, even in my own hometown, and for those who don't know, a little girl who was part of this family was murdered back in November, and I have just gone through hell and back. And regardless of what I've gone through in my life, I have never, ever been as hurt as I have been over that. And people need to start writing. The congressmen, people better start doing something that's been, let's get a handle. I don't know where they're coming up with the numbers that violent crime is down. It's not. I know people dying. So, well, you know, between I got two kids in therapy and my husband, he was already hearing gunshots from Vietnam. Now we really hear them.
And, well, it's a problem that's going to have to be addressed, and they can sweep it under the carpet all they want.
Well, there was the man who went into church, I don't have the link, and shot the minister because he didn't like how he was. You know, I don't understand this. I don't understand how the richest country in the world can have so much violent crime. And part of it is, I think, our war in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's got the people in the mindset that violence is okay.
We're the most violent nation on earth.
That violence is okay.
Yes.
And it's so good talking to you, Guy. I just wanted to say that. And
well, Amanda, thank you. And I for all of our friends listening, a lot of folks on the Democratic Underground website have had their good wishes toward Amanda for a long time, knowing the tragedy her family has suffered. And it's something the Democratic Underground website family has taken very seriously, and given Amanda their good wishes and most certainly their prayers all through this whole ordeal.
And I do appreciate that so very much. Like I said, another thing that I don't...
Hey, we got news coming up at the top of the hour, Amanda.
Okay, and listen, take care of yourself.
Thank you,
and good luck with your new show.
Oh, okay, and the best to you and your family.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, there's someone's been through it for a while. Hey, we've got a break for news at the top of the hour. Listen to the Guy James Show. We'll be back. You stay tuned.
Restoring the liberal media, the Guy James Show. Southwest Florida's official news, weather, and traffic station. Wing WNOG.
CBS News, I'm Dave Barrett. Abuse of Iraqi prisoners came to light last year, and now an Army MP will pay for his role in the Abu Ghraib scandal. A military jury in Fort Hood, Texas, deliberated for about 3 hours and sentenced Charles Grainer to 10 years behind bars. He had been convicted yesterday on 5 counts, including assault, conspiracy, and maltreating prisoners. Leaving court, Specialist Grainer was put inside a van and was asked,
"What do you think of how you're going to make out over the next 10 years?
I'll be smiling and take life as a challenge."
Charles Grainer's reply there, "I'll keep smiling and take life as a challenge." Reporter Jay Gormley says earlier Grainer testified during today's sentencing phase.
Grainer stopped short of apologizing, but told the jury, "I did not enjoy what I did there. I acknowledge a lot of it was wrong, and I acknowledge a lot of it was criminal."
CBS News military consultant Jeff McCausland served in the Army and reached the rank of colonel. His take on this 10-year sentence, which Grainer received.
All these actions show not only a willingness for us to take action against those who've done things which are beyond the pale, they also send a clear signal to all the soldiers and sailors, airmen, and Marines now serving that this type of action will be tolerated.
Iraqis will be voting in a couple of weeks to decrease the chance of car bombings at polls. There's a plan to limit the use of cars over a 3-day period surrounding Election Day. Even so, U.S. Army Brigadier General Carter Hamm admits that Iraq will be dangerous after the ballots are tallied.
We will see the insurgents focus their efforts no longer on disrupting the electoral process, but perhaps seeking to intimidate or threaten those who participated or the winners.
No survivors expected from the avalanche around Park City, Utah. Up to 5 skiers could be lost in very deep snow, up to 35 feet deep. Stevie Wonder, Elton John, Gloria Estefan have all performed from L.A. and New York and London. It's that live concert for tsunami relief going on now. Celebrities like Brad Pitt, Leonardo DiCaprio, Rob Lowe, James Woods, Danny DeVito, and others have been answering phones, taking pledges. On the ground, the U.S. military says in a couple of weeks it'll begin winding down its relief efforts in Sri Lanka and Thailand. A 33-yard field goal in overtime keeps the Pittsburgh Steelers' Super Bowl hopes alive, and the New York Jets are grounded in the NFL playoffs. Steelers coach Bill Cowher, after New York missed a field goal in regulation, then Pittsburgh came back in OT to win 20-17.
I give so much credit to New York Jets. That football team has got three overtimes to play as hard as they have. My hat goes off to Herm and every member of that New York Jets team. Hey, we're lucky to go through this game. We've got to play a lot better next week.
That's from CBS Sports. The Steelers will be in the AFC Championship game against the winner of tomorrow's Indianapolis-New England game. And going on now, Atlanta leads St. Louis 14-7, second.
Now, when you talk trucks, it's hard to talk about the all-new Nissan Titan without using words like powerful, beautiful, comfortable, rugged, tough, sturdy, and that's why every day people pay $25,000 to $30,000. Sutherland Nissan in 2004 sold more new Nissans than ever before. We're going to get bigger in 2005 because at Sutherland, you can drive home your big, bad, bodacious V8 Titan King Cab XE. $18,988, are you kidding me? Loaded stereo CD, automatic and air, good truck stuff everywhere. $18,988, Naples, are you listening? Dennis, I'm talking to you. If there was ever a real steal-a-truck deal, this is it. Your all-new rock solid, loaded V8, Titan King Cab XE. $18,988. Waiting for you right now. Smack dab in the middle of Fort Myers on US 41 south of Bell Tower Shop on Tamiami Trail. New Titan V8 King Cab XE. $18,988 at Sutherland Nissan today. Yippee-yi-yo-ki-yay.
Since 592-219 and 592-615. Price after factory rebates and dealer discounts. Plus government taxes, finance, dock, prep, and emission fees.
The following is a paid commercial announcement. The views and opinions expressed and the advice offered by the host are not necessarily those of Wink WNOG, Fort Myers Broadcasting, Meridian Broadcasting, or any of their affiliate sponsors or assigns.
Saturday evening. Glad to have you along with us this evening. All our folks on the internet and all around many different websites on the internet. Glad to have you along. And of course, our folks here in Naples and the Fort Myers area, all the way up to Sarasota and all the way down to Marco Island. Glad to have all you folks along. And before I get back to the phone, I want to do remind you once again, all Democrats are invited to attend the monthly meeting of the Collier County Democratic Club this Monday, January 17th at 6 p.m. at the Naples Bath and Tennis Club. Boy, I'll tell you, that is a nice place on Airport Road down in Naples. All members and non-members, bring a whole carload. They're all welcome. Free refreshments. Now, how can you beat that? Featured speaker is going to be the president of the Collier County NAACP, Linda Sanders. She's going to be the featured speaker, and you will enjoy that, I assure you. They always have fabulous meetings down at the Collier County Democratic Club. That's a lively bunch, let me tell you. And don't forget, Monday is Martin Luther King Jr. Day. There's going to be a big parade in Naples starting at noon, and there's going to be a ceremony at Cambier Park immediately following the parade. And if you want information on the Collier County Democratic activities, log on to www.collierdemocrats.org. You better get on out to that parade, and you better get to that meeting. That's all I got to say. You'll enjoy it. I know you will. Before I get back to the phone, and I'll get there in just one second. We were talking about Bill, I believe, brought up this deal about Scott McClellan, the president's press secretary. He's amazing. He really is. I've seen some good ones over the years. There have been some very good ones. That Ari Fleischer, he was... Well, don't get me started on Ari Fleischer. But anyway, McClellan got asked this question. When it comes to Iraq, North Korea, and the president, this president stands up and says they've got weapons programs, they've got weapons of mass destruction. Isn't it the case that there will be many people in the world who will say, how can we believe him and how does he deal with that? McClellan replied, He's going to continue working with the international community to confront the threats that we face. So the reporter wasn't satisfied with that, and he asked this, Scott, this is an important political question that you're not really addressing squarely, which is, can this president or a future president go to a Tony Blair or a leader of Spain and say, we believe something is happening, and you need to join us in a preemptive show of force? Has this experience not totally wiped out that possibility for political action in the future? Now, that's a reasonable question, don't you think? McClellan answered it this way. We're working together in a number of areas to confront threats that the international community faces. He won't answer the question. But then again, how could he? How could he answer that question? There is no answer to that question. Without looking like a fool and making the president look like a fool, and, oh, I won't go there. But, you know, I got this list. And like I said before, the listeners of this program, most of you are pretty intelligent people. And we had people on this program, experts, talking about weapons of mass destruction before we ever, you know, before we ever invaded Iraq. And people like Scott Ritter saying, no, there's no weapons there. And then we had Bush. Now listen to this. On May the 30th, 2003, this is after we invaded him, okay? You want to know what a prevaricator this president is? My, aren't I kind to him tonight, prevaricator. Here's a quote from him. But for those who say we haven't found the banned manufacturing devices or banned weapons, they're wrong. We found them. That's George Bush. May the 30th, 2003, in an interview with TVP Poland, telling them we found the weapons of mass destruction. And then Condi Rice, we don't want the smoking gun to be a mushroom cloud. These are the things the Republicans would love us to forget. They would love us to just wash away all these quotes like they never happened, because you know why? It makes them look like idiots. Condoleezza Rice, once again. How the United States should react if Iraq acquired weapons of mass destruction. The first line of defense should be a clear and classical statement of deterrence. If they do acquire weapons of mass destruction, their weapons will be unusable because any attempt to use them will bring national obliteration. Oh, yeah. And it goes on and on. I've got 17 pages of these, folks. 17 pages of quotes. You know, here's Dick Cheney. Simply stated, there is no doubt. There is no doubt that Saddam Hussein now has weapons of mass destruction. That's Dick Cheney. Thank you, Dick, for showing up. And already, here we go, Ari Fleischer, back when he was in. There is already a mountain of evidence that Saddam Hussein is gathering weapons for the purpose of using them, and adding additional information is like adding a foot to Mount Everest. George Bush, president, right now Iraq is expanding and improving facilities that were used for the production of biological weapons. George W. Bush, president, to the UN. And George W. Bush, Iraq has stockpiled biological and chemical weapons and is rebuilding the facilities used to make more of these weapons. We have sources. Sources, the name wasn't Alawi, was it? We have sources that tell us that Saddam Hussein recently authorized Iraqi field commanders to use chemical weapons, the very weapons the dictator tells us he does not have. Again, there are 17 pages of this. 17 pages of flat-out lies. Lies. Not misrepresentations, not little faux pas, not little white lies. These are big ones, folks. Big, fat lies that these people told. You know, here's George W. Bush, president. Our intelligence officials estimate that Saddam Hussein had the material to produce as much as 500 tons of sarin, mustard, and V.S. nerve agent. Colin Powell, we know that Saddam Hussein is determined to keep his weapons of mass destruction, is determined to make more. And the people of the United States put up with this. Oh, they did. Yes, they did. Hey, let's go to Phil down in Collier County. Hi, Phil.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I just wanted to add to your list real quick of donators to Mr. Bush's inaugural. Coca-Cola Company for $100,000 and Walmart for $250,000.
Ooh, Walmart usually doesn't hand out cash to hardly anybody.
That's correct.
not their employees, not anybody.
That's right.
Speaking of Walmart, have you heard about their ads they're running?
Which ones?
Well, they're getting beat over the head, you know, about their wages and about all the lawsuits and the violations against employee rights. They're making a bunch of commercials trying to polish their image.
Oh, yeah, stating that they pay better wages than their competitors or stores of equal, you know, on equal footing and whatnot. Yeah, my girlfriend was telling me about that.
Yeah, so, you know, the old propaganda machine goes on.
Oh, yes, it does.
Dave, Phil, thanks for your call.
Thank you very much.
Good to hear
Bye.
From you. Let's see, we're going to go to Dave in North Carolina. Hi, Dave.
This is me?
Yeah.
Oh, that was so fast.
Yeah, well.
Guys, the thing that is so hard for me people to accept or live with, I think, but that what I'm able to put together of this PNAC crowd a dozen years ago, Rumsfeld, Wolfowitz, Cheney, all them, they had then spelled out their plan to invade Iraq. They even went so far as to say to get the people behind it, they would need an event of comparable to the Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
And,
don't you know?
Huh?
Don't you know they got their Pearl Harbor event, didn't they?
Yes, they did, and it was almost something impossible to have happen unless orders from very high places ordered all of our interceptor jets to stand down. That's just, you know, it couldn't happen. It's just, watching it that day, I thought, this is not happening in a country that has a rapid air defense, a rapid response team.
Totally asleep at the wheel.
Oh, but then there have been so many warnings from so many different sources, and they actually had it all spelled out for them.
So, Dave, what you're saying is you think someone put the people asleep at the wheel, made them asleep at the wheel.
I believe that they fully knew that it was going to happen. They were being warned by every source possible, but they needed their new Pearl Harbor to justify invading Iraq. Once it did happen, they all but ordered Richard Clark and his people there find some connection between these events and 9/11. They said, but there is no connection. Iraq had nothing to do with this. They said, find some connection. Go back until you can. You know?
Well, Clark said Bush went running, walking down the hall saying it was Saddam Hussein. Let's get ready to get Iraq. You know, bring me information that says it was Saddam Hussein.
And that, most people who listen to Fox and Limbaugh and Hannity, because in every time that they say 9/11, you're supposed to, in that same sentence, mention Saddam or Iraq.
Oh, absolutely.
And so, if you, Amy Godwin Goodwin, she went about at the Republican convention asking some seemingly educated Republicans, do you believe that Iraq were the ones that did the 9/11? Oh, yes. And she asked each of them, did you view the film on Fahrenheit 9/11? Oh, no, I would never listen to anything like that.
So mm-hmm. Well,
they would listen to their Fox and Limbaugh, though.
You know, Dave, obviously you are one of the let it happen on person crowd. Let it happen on purpose. And
I have no question in my mind it could not have happened unless our air defense was said, stand down. If under any normal SOP it is, even if they don't have a high risk, aircraft turns off a transponder and goes off course, zap, you got a fighter jet coming at you at twice the speed of a bullet.
I cannot because I won't allow my brain to go there because the thought of that, if I would accept that into my mind, the thought of that would be so awful.
It means we've got a government comprised of psychopaths.
Well, that's exactly what it means. It would mean even worse than that. It would mean, and that's why I just cannot allow my brain to go there.
I know a lot of Americans can't, but Guy, the secret of solving a problem, of dealing with problems is that you got to see reality for what
That's
it is,
right.
or you fail to
That's
deal
right.
with it. You know, a lot of people want to see this administration as just well-intentioned, bumbling oafs, stumbling through this, that the war was not a planned, deliberate thing from a dozen years before, that they tried to sell it to Clinton, and he wouldn't go for it, that they needed to get rid of Clinton every way they could, but couldn't do it. Finally, they rigged an election and got their own people in, and then they did it. And that sounds outrageous. You don't want to believe it. I don't want to believe it. But I am a realist.
Well, some of the facts are, well, you, you look at some of the things that happened to this, that happened in this whole series of events, and you, it is hard to look at some of the things and go that they were just absolutely happenstance. You know, some things were so suspect. But again, I just can't do it. I can't bring myself.
I don't think Kerry could either. I don't think Edwards could either. I don't think most of our Congress is willing to say, oh, I think they're terrible people, but they wouldn't do that. Who would bring down?
Well, Dave, you know, Dave, if I would accept that as my reality, I don't see how I could have any faith in anybody in the government ever again.
Well, there have been throughout the history of the world some terrible dictators, emperors, and whatnot that have planned to conquer great wealth and countries that have done some outrageously terrible things. You'd like to hope it wouldn't happen in the United States now today.
Well, we like to hope that humanity isn't capable of such dastardly deeds, but they've proven over the years, as you said, that humanity is capable of almost anything.
You have to grope an awful long way out to not come to the conclusions that I have. I've been reading the books Inside Job by Jim Maher and two books by David Ray Griffin, a professor at Claremont College. He sees the 9/11 Commission as a total omission commission.
Yeah.
And his book, The New Pearl Harbor, spells it out very clearly. How could this have happened? How so much had to be stopped that would have normally taken place?
Mm-hmm. I know.
It would be totally interrupted.
Dave, I thank you for your call. I do appreciate it.
Yeah, it's something tough, but we got to deal with what's there, brother.
Well,
I love you and your program.
Thank you so much for calling, Dave. Let's go talk to Ray in Connecticut. Hi, Ray. Is Ray with us?
Hello.
Hi, Ray.
Something wrong with the connection, I think. I could barely hear you all of a sudden.
Oh.
I could hear Dave and you perfectly a moment ago. Can you hear me well?
Yo, very well.
Very good. Okay, well, before I get into the topic, I'm wondering about saving you money. The cost of these phone calls are borne by you if you're toll-free.
That's right.
Now, if we call you on a cell phone, would that diminish your expenses? Because on Saturday evenings, I can call you free of charge. I'm sure many of our other callers can call you free of charge.
Well, that's a good question. I don't know the answer to that.
Well, if you can find out, put it on your website or something.
Yeah.
Save some money.
I will. I'll try that. I'll see what's up.
Very good. All right. First of all, I want to commemorate Martin Luther King for all that he achieved in life, all that he strove, his courage, his inspiration. But I want to also point out to people that it's no coincidence that so many of the martyrs that we've had in our history, and if you look at the history of other countries, you'll find the same thing, were liberals. When have the terrible liberals ever killed people? You know, it's just this constant history of people like Abraham Lincoln, the great liberal of his time, Teddy Roosevelt, whom they shot and didn't succeed in killing, John Kennedy, Bob Kennedy, Martin Luther King. So many accidental deaths that we attribute to accidents always seem to happen to liberals. Senator Paul Wellstone, most recently, but if you go back into our past, you'll find there are many other liberals who died accidental deaths, usually plane crashes. So many liberals and so few conservatives. Isn't it amazing how even accidents rarely claim the lives of famous conservatives? And certainly very, very few conservatives have ever been assassinated by liberals. It's no accident, I think, because liberals are the better people, which is why I think people would do well to check out my website, which stresses that Jesus was a great liberal, one of the greatest liberals of all time. And that website, of course, is called liberalslikechrist.org.
Wait a minute, Ray.
Yes.
Wait a minute. Just hold up right there for a minute.
You bet.
Everybody knows that all Christians are Republicans. What do you mean coming on this program and talking like you're a liberal? How can that be? I'm just so my.
Yes.
My head is spinning, Ray.
Well, if people, actually I keep hearing from people all the time who say, oh, I thought I was the only one. Thank God there are people who know, as I know, that when I read the scriptures and I read about Jesus, I don't see anybody who resembles Bush and Reagan. These people who claim to be Christian aren't at all like Jesus. And on the other hand, people like Martin Luther King certainly is one of the closest people to Jesus that we've seen in our lifetime, certainly in my lifetime. And there are so many other great liberals. And I praise people, Republicans, like Abraham Lincoln and Teddy Roosevelt. You know, Teddy Roosevelt tried to achieve some things that were very liberal, and the Republicans repudiated him. By his time, they had ceased being Abraham Lincoln liberals, and they, Republicans rather, and had become big business Republicans. So they repudiated Teddy Roosevelt, and his distant cousin and his wife, Franklin Roosevelt and Eleanor Roosevelt, really took up many of the liberal ideas of that Teddy Roosevelt couldn't get enacted. But he was a great liberal.
Hey, Ray, I see you mentioned on the screen here, so you want to mention something about Tom DeLay?
Oh, yes, Tom DeLay. I didn't tune in early, so I didn't know if I had missed it. But there's a section on Tom DeLay that I put on my website, the other website, which is JesusNoRepublican.org. Mm-hmm. And if people go to that website, they'll see the piece on Tom DeLay that I put there with links, where Tom DeLay actually went to a church event with other congresspeople in Washington and read from the pulpit the passage of Jesus talking about those who call Lord, Lord, who say to him, Lord, Lord, but don't follow his teaching, and those who build their house on sand. And he continued the passage until it actually concludes with, and their house will be swept away by the floods, and seemed to insinuate that the tsunami victims, 150,000 of them, have no one but themselves to blame, that God punished them because they weren't supposedly, I guess, Christians like him, that they were washed away and killed by God as punishment. And he walked away from the pulpit without any explanation.
It certainly shouldn't surprise anybody, any thinking person, that Tom DeLay might come up with something like that.
Oh, this was so, so atrocious. And on the site, you'll see, follow the link, and you can actually hear Tom DeLay reading it. They have an MP3 file where, if you have any questions about it, any doubt about it, you can hear his own voice, sanctimonious Tom DeLay, who's been declared this model Christian and layman of the year by these false Christians.
Hey, Ray, thanks so much for your call.
Oh, thank you for the great work you do.
Do appreciate hearing from you.
Goodbye, guy.
Goodbye now. You know, can I, you know, people start talking about some of the things Bush has done over the last couple of years and some of the wild things he says. Can someone please tell me how to tell what's real and what is a fabrication coming from the Bush administration? When does the truth stop and the lies begin? Is there any truth? You know, other than what's absolutely obvious, do these people ever tell the truth? I don't know about you, but when I see Bush on TV even talking about his dog anymore, I don't believe him. Whenever he makes a statement of any kind, it seems as though there's got to be a lie in it someplace. I mean, that's the experience. You know, face it, Bush came to the White House with, as many have said, a clear purpose of getting rid of Saddam Hussein. There's been many insiders from the White House attest to that fact, and it's made it indisputable. So Bush has to manufacture a crisis of some kind to fool the public into going along with his idiotic plan. And did he ever pull off a good one? Well, of course he did. Nukes, chemical weapons, biological weapons, vehicles which would deliver them in less than an hour, he went all out. You remember, he even sent Colin Powell to the UN to embellish his huge fabrication. The guy has no conscience. No conscience at all. not being satisfied to scare the hell out of half the American citizens who thought Saddam was going to be in their backyards at any moment, Bush decided to scare hell out of the senior citizens now. Hey, seniors, did you know the Social Security Administration is going to go belly up any day now? That's the way it's sounding. That's the way they're making it sound. You'll all be eating dog food. You know, and not the good kind either, that four cans for a dollar stuff. And you'll be living under the bridges and in tents out in the cold. It's going to be terrible. So let us help you. Let us take some of your Social Security money and give it to some friends of ours. Some friends over on Wall Street. And they'll invest it for you. And shazam, you'll be living the high life. You understand there's nothing in it for our friends over on Wall Street. No. They're doing it for you. They're doing it because I, President Bush, want to do something good for you. So we'll take some of your money. We'll give it to my friends over on... They happen to be over on Wall Street. I don't know. And they'll invest that money, and you'll just have more money than you ever knew what to do with. You know, truth be told, if Bush and his Republican neocon friends had their way, and they know this is true, they would do away with Social Security completely. Don't kid yourself on that one. They would absolutely do away with it. There is no question about it. They didn't want to... Well, the Republicans fought Social Security tooth and nail from its very inception when it started. They wanted no part of Social Security. They've been fighting every last bit of it for years. And now they are going to save Social Security. Give me a break. If you're stupid enough to accept that argument, baby, you're too dumb to live. I mean, you are a moron if you believe that argument. I'm sorry, but I can't put it any other way. If you believe this Social Security thing, you're just a flat-out moron. Hey, we're going to pause for a break at the bottom of the hour. You're listening to the Guy James Show. Don't go anywhere. We're going to talk about morons again when we come back.
A Democrat and proud of it, Guy James. Southwest Florida's official news, weather, and traffic station. Wink WNOG.
When it comes to life insurance, people often make some serious mistakes. Today, insurance advisor Anthony Domino Jr. highlights a few of them.
Life insurance is effectively all about time and money. The product you buy is typically based upon how someone depends upon you financially. Some people stick their finger in the wind and say, I need $1 million or $2 million. That's not the best way to handle it. The concept of human life value is something that's quantifiable and is determinable.
What about the time issue?
As far as the product that people buy, they mistake and misunderstand the amount of duration or time that they'll need life insurance. People either need life insurance for a short term, resulting in a term insurance situation, or for a longer period of time, which would be permanent.
Many people also misunderstand the cost of life insurance. Rather than focus on what life insurance will cost this year, think about its cost over the long term. This Financial Security News Minute has been brought to you by the Life and Health Insurance Foundation for Education. The difference between term and permanent life insurance is similar in some respects to the difference between renting and owning a home. Today, insurance advisor Jim Clary explains.
Term insurance is like renting. You pay a premium each year as you get older. That premium gets a little more expensive. Ultimately, at the end of your lifetime, if you held term insurance throughout that period of time, you'd have a pile of canceled checks and nothing to show for it.
What about permanent insurance?
Permanent insurance is like owning the home. It's generally a little more expensive in the beginning, but can be considerably cheaper over the long run because you do build equity in the policy. The premiums are level as opposed to increasing. Thus, in your older years, you can have a policy that may cost you considerably less than what a term insurance policy does.
For more information about the different types of life insurance available, visit life-line.org. This Financial Security News Minute has been brought to you by the Life and Health Insurance Foundation for Education.
Presenting great moments in firstgov.gov history. For years, Americans have turned to firstgov.gov for their government information. 2000, Mrs. Marilyn Gorman takes online government to new heights, applying for Social Security benefits before breakfast.
And got him.
Okay, who wants pancakes?
2002. In what later became known as the Download heard round the world, the Duggins of Wichita print their own passport applications in their underwear.
Honey, get dressed. Looks like we're going to Luxembourg.
And 2004. FirstGov.gov astounds Anna Maria Montero of Biloxi by promptly answering all her emails, no matter how often she asks a question about the government.
Sure, the U.S. government can get back to me every time. But that son of mine? Huh.
Make your own great moment. Log on today. FirstGov.gov. It's government made easy.
One voice. It can get the point across, but it only carries so far. Add a voice. It's richer, louder, but that has limits too. Add a third voice. It's even more powerful. Add another, and another, and many, many more. And we are stronger than ever. That's the power of a community coalition. They help community groups, faith groups, civic organizations, PTAs, employers, and many others in your community organize their resources and focus them where they're needed most, like fighting to keep kids away from drugs. Ask a group that you belong to if they should belong to a community coalition. It's easy to get involved. Visit helpyourcommunity.org and they'll tell you exactly how your group can help. That's helpyourcommunity.org, because you get more when you get together. Brought to you by the Office of National Drug Control Policy and the Ad Council.
Your weekend station, Wink WNOG.
You've heard the right. Now all that's left is the truth. Guy James.
Back with you for the last half hour of the program here on the Guy James Show, 888-602-7500. We hope you'll give us a call, 7501, 7502, 03 and 04, 479-5540, and 263-6570. Gee whiz, I wonder where all of our conservative callers are. I am wondering about that. Hey, I do have a question, and I think the only person can answer it is probably Biz. Her and Ron are over there in the control room tonight, running all the bells and whistles that's going on. Biz, I noticed that before when the program starts at the top of the hour, they play a disclaimer, and it says that the views and blah 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 of
the views and opinions offered are not the advice of la 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 la.
Yeah, and the advice given are not the views of the station.
Right.
Do they play that in front of the Rush Limbaugh program?
I have no idea. I think I'm in class when that's playing, but I would think not.
No, and they don't play it in front of the Hannity show, and they don't play it in front of the Neil Bohr show. So I can just draw one conclusion from that. If they don't subscribe to the views of this program, that they, since they don't disclaim those gentlemen, that they must subscribe to the views of their program.
You know, that's a pretty good point.
Good question.
That's a good question.
I'll expect you and Ron will have the answer to that next week.
Oh, you're putting me on the hot spot now.
Oh,
I see
yeah.
How this is working.
I just want you to go right upstairs to station management and ask them that question.
I kind of need my job.
All right. We're having a little fun with Biz and Ron over there. Good people in the control room tonight, I tell you what, running the board. They have to stay right on the ball over there or I get carried away. They keep me in line, actually. 888-602-7500, 7501, 02, 03, and 04. Now, I've got this letter that I just have to read. It's going to take me a couple of 3 minutes to read it, but I just got to read this. I don't know when I've seen a more interesting letter than this one. And it's called, and this is for real, this is no joke. It's called, I Am a Conservative Christian and the Religious Right Scares Me Too, by Chuck Baldwin. This is December the 15th, 2004, in the Covenant News. And this is from Chuck Baldwin. For those readers who are unfamiliar with my biography, let me here provide a thumbnail sketch of my conservative bona fides. I attended, graduated, or received degrees from fundamentalist Christian schools such as Midwestern Baptist College in Pontiac, Michigan, Thomas Road Bible Institute, now known as Liberty Bible Institute at Liberty University in Lynchburg, Virginia, Christian Bible College in Rocky Mount, North Carolina, and Trinity Baptist College in Jacksonville, Florida. I am currently in my 30th year as the senior pastor of the Crossroads Baptist Church, independent, in Pensacola, Florida. I was the executive director of the Florida Moral Majority in the early 1980s. I was an active member of the local Christian coalition. I have marched and protested against abortion clinics. I have led several pro-life rallies and even led our church to construct a memorial to aborted babies. I have conducted small and large pro-life, pro-family rallies and meetings in the Pensacola area and in many towns and cities across the state of Florida. When Ronald Reagan was running for president, I helped Dr. Jerry Falwell, one of the show's favorite people, I might add, register more than 50,000 new conservative voters in my state. I have attended White House functions with former President Ronald Reagan and former Vice President George H.W. Bush. I supported and defended Chief Justice Roy Moore and his fight to display a Ten Commandments monument at a pro-Ten Commandments rally in Montgomery, Alabama, and even on national television. I am an annual member of the National Rifle Association and a life member of Gun Owners of America. I have been the featured speaker at several pro-Second Amendment rallies. No one can honestly question my commitment to pro-life, pro-family, conservative causes. That being said, the religious right, as it now exists, scares me. For one reason, on the whole, the religious right has obviously and patently become little more than a propaganda machine for the Republican Party in general and for President George W. Bush in particular. This is in spite of the fact that both Bush and the Republican Party in Washington, D.C. have routinely ignored and even trampled the very principles which the religious right claims to represent. Therefore, no longer does the religious right represent conservative Christian values. Instead, they represent their own self-serving interests at the expense of those values. It also appears painfully obvious to me that in order to sit at the king's table, the religious right is willing to compromise any principle, no matter how sacred. As such, it has become a hollow movement. Sadly, the religious right is now a movement without a cause except the cause of advancing the Republican Party. Beyond that, the religious right is actively assisting those who would destroy our freedoms. On the whole, the religious right comports with those within the Bush administration and within the Republican Party who, in the name of fighting terrorism, are actually terrorizing constitutional protections of our liberties. Remember who's writing this, folks. The religious right offered virtually no resistance to the creation of the Department of Homeland Security, the passage of the Patriot Act, or the recently created position of National Intelligence Director. Neither did the religious right offer even a whimper of protest as President Bush and Republicans in Congress created a first-ever national ID card in the new intelligence bill, which eerily has more in common with early 20th century German and Russian intelligence institutions than anything envisioned by America's founding fathers. Another disconcerting feature of today's religious right is its attempt to Christianize political entities which it supports and to demonize political entities which it opposes. This trend is especially scary. When people are told that they're voting Christian by voting for the Republican Party candidates, it is being intimated that they are voting non-Christian by voting for any other candidate. This is not only silly on its face, it's downright dangerous. I don't remember anyone saying people voted Christian when they elected the outspoken Christian candidate Jimmy Carter president. Yet Carter, in his personal life, demonstrated as much, if not more, Christianity than does George W. Bush. If you recall, Carter even taught Sunday school in a Southern Baptist church while president. However, in spite of the fact that President Bush and the Republican Party in Washington, D.C. have repeatedly supported copious unchristian, not to mention unconstitutional programs and policy, Christians act as if Bush and his fellow Republicans have ushered in the millennial kingdom. More than that, the religious right appears to believe that George W. Bush is the anointed vicar of Christ. But instead of wearing the garb of a religious leader, he wears the shroud of a political and a military commander-in-chief. As such, in the minds of the religious right, Bush's war in Iraq is a holy crusade. America is fast taking on the shape of the old Holy Roman Empire, and President Bush is quickly morphing into a modern-day Caesar. The willingness of the religious right to give President Bush king-like subservience is easily seen in the way they demonize anyone who dares to oppose them. This is very unnerving. Are we heading for a modern-day religious inquisition? This one led not by the Catholic Church, but by the religious right. Are we witnessing the type of marriage between church and state that America's founders originally feared? I used to believe that liberals were paranoid for being fearful of conservative Christians gaining political power. Now, I share their trepidation. Of course, the sad truth is, neither George W. Bush nor the Republican Party in Washington, D.C. represent genuine Christian or even conservative principles. If they did, they would take their oath to the Constitution seriously, and then neither liberals nor conservatives would have anything to fear, for the United States Constitution protects the rights and freedoms of all men. Unfortunately, when the seed of Bush's unconstitutional policies come to fruition, it will produce large-scale fallout economically, socially, and politically. And sadder still will be that instead of blaming Bush's infidelity to constitutional government and conservative principles, people will blame Christianity and conservatism itself. The result of this miscalculation will doubtless be a massive tide of support for more and greater unconstitutional government, but only under a different name. Chuck Baldwin, Baptist minister, Pensacola, Florida, for 30 years. The man knows. He knows. He sees it. He admits it. He admonishes people to understand it. People who don't look at it seriously now the way they should. Folks, this is a dangerous movement. And here is a man right now who sees the danger. He fears it. He fears it as all Americans should fear it. I fear it. You should fear it. And you should help your neighbor who doesn't see it to understand what this is. This man nailed it right to the wall, right here. He did. I'm going to go to Dan in Naples. Dan?
Hi there, guy.
Hi.
Just want to briefly address this Social Security situation. Anyone that's followed this whole program realizes we had so many more people back in the 30s and 40s and 50s. They were able to pay for Social Security for the people that were starting to retire. And everyone kind of forgets, guy, that the program itself has a couple of different functions. Number one, it never meant to be a retirement program. But maybe one of the best things about it, it helps people out whose breadwinner gets lost early in life, and children get funds from the federal government, which I think is one of the greatest parts of the program that no one ever really addresses. But be that as it may, guy, we're going to run out of money in this program. It's a pay-as-you-go right now. There is no trust fund. And what people are not talking about is the ideal situation, especially for people like myself and you, and I assume you're in your 50s and somewhere in that range of age and what have you, that may not want to put $1 in the stock market, can go ahead and opt as an option in the new individual funds the government will probably eventually offer, is to buy Treasury bonds directly issued by the U.S. Treasury. And there's this fear in the market, guy, that foreign governments, foreign companies, et cetera, are going to stop buying our Treasury bonds. Well, if Americans start buying their own Treasury bonds directly from the U.S. Treasury through the new Social Security accounts, and granted, we're going to probably have to run a $2 trillion deficit, but that doesn't bother me one bit, only for the reason that if you worked it out over, let's say, 20 years or so, and say we're going to allocate $100 billion a year for 20 years, then this program, when it gets to that point, guy, is going to be up and running. It's going to be able to pass funds down from generation to generation. We have got to do something. Current Social Security pays us a 1.5% return, and Treasury bonds, as right now, there's probably 3.5 to 4% if you're to buy a bunch of them over, you know, extended maturities and what have you. And that's buying no stocks at all, guy. For the younger people that want to take a little more risk and want to put some stocks in their portfolio, stocks for the last 75 years have averaged close to 10% a year, so they can do that. But the older people aren't going to, they're not going to mess with that. They want that assured return. And they're going to be able to buy U.S. Treasury bonds right from our government. We got to do something, guy. This program's going to fold under its own weight eventually.
And I spoke to Paul Krugman the other day that estimates this program is absolutely solvent until the year 2040.
Paul doesn't know what he's talking about. I've been in the
wait, hold it right there. Hold it right there.
Yeah.
You are going to tell me that you, Dan, in Naples, are going to criticize the credentials of one of the premier economists in the United States, Mr. Paul Krugman, who has the respect of the entire...
I thought you were referring to Paul Krugman, the individual who writes for the...
He writes, and he is an expert economist for years.
But believe me, we're going to run out of
money. No, wait a minute. We're going back to you. You're going to argue with Paul Krugman. You are. You know more about this than he does.
No, but I can mention...
Do you know more about this than Paul Krugman does?
I can mention one point to you.
Do you know more than Paul Krugman does?
Would you let me finish my point?
If you're going to tell me you know more than Paul Krugman does...
I'm not saying I know more than guy. I'm saying...
He said that this is solvent until the year 2042, and you made the statement that Paul Krugman does not know what he's talking about. Did you not say that? I'm asking you, did you say Paul Krugman doesn't know what he's talking about?
Did you say that, guy?
You most certainly did say that.
No,
you said Paul Krugman does not know what he's talking about. Did you say Paul Krugman does not know what he's talking about? Did you say that or not? Did you say Paul Krugman doesn't know what he's talking about?
Then I'll retract that for one second.
You will? You're a fool. Goodbye, Dan. You're not going to call this program and say that Paul Krugman... I love it. I just love it when some fool from Naples calls the program, obviously a right-wing radical Republican, there's no question about it. He's drank the Kool-Aid, he's slurped it down, and he's going to believe anything that Emperor Bush and his crew says about Social Security. They're fear-mongering. There's nothing more to it than that. They are fear-mongering. Many people in the Congress know all about this, have spoken to congressmen that know that the Social Security Fund right now is solvent in 2042. But we have this world premier economist, Dan, from Naples, call and tell us that he knows better. Well, damn, he ought to get on up to Washington right away, because I think he can solve this problem single-handedly, evidently. Oh, my. And if the Bushes are so damn smart on running our economy, and if we should trust them on the Social Security, how many of you, everybody, boys and girls, hold your hands up right now, how many of you think we ought to trust the Bushes on what they believe is good for Social Security? Well, let me tell you why I don't believe one word coming from the Bush administration about any economic policy, anything to do with a buck. I don't believe anything they say. Did you see the headline on the Fort Myers News Press and many other newspapers across in the business section Thursday? Trade deficit soared. Now, here's some people that are the experts on the Social Security, mind you. They know how to manage money. Oh, yes, they do. Trade deficit soars to a record high. $60.3 billion in November. An all-time high. Here's these people telling us for a year and a half, 2 years, that budget deficit is going to be heading down, folks, and we're going to be in the high cotton pretty soon. Oh, yeah. $60 billion budget deficit. It's a trade deficit. Amazing. The Bush administration urged other countries to help fix the problem, but analysts said the yawning deficit won't be easily solved. The October trade deficit was $56 billion. The deficit through November totaled $561 billion and is expected to top $600 billion once December figures are tallied. You know, last year was a record. Now, I guess I should give the Bushes some credit for setting records, actually. Last year, they set a trade deficit figure record of $496 billion, but by golly, they've outdone themselves. They're going to be up to $600 billion this year. And these are the people that we should allow to manage our money for us. I don't think so. Would you take your money, you know, talking about Social Security and trusting anybody in the Bush administration? If you knew your bank down the street had lost all its money and was $600 billion in debt and sinking fast, would you take your money down there and put it in that bank? Would you? If George Bush was the president of that bank, and I know that's a stretch, if George Bush, and really that's what we're talking about here, George Bush is the president of the bank here in America. He's the president of everything, and he's the emperor, and he's presiding over this trade deficit and record budget deficit. And you want to give this man your money? You want to let his economic advisors tell you what to do with your money? I don't think so. I don't think so. I'll let Bill Clinton's people tell me what to do with my money any old day of the week. I'll let them tell me. I'll let almost any Democratic president tell me what to do with my money. Not this one. When you stop and think about that. Now, you just stop and think about that for a minute. That's ludicrous, isn't it? You know how absolutely laughable that is to trust the Bushes with your money? Here's a guy that thought we were going to run into Iraq and spend about $10 or $12 billion. That's what the initial estimate was. We're going to walk out of there with flowers on her head and the whole bit after spending $10 or $12 billion. And, of course, all the partners over there would help pay the bill. We walk out paying nothing. And what are we in for, $200 billion now and no end in sight? And our military hardware has been ruined? Yeah, let's turn your money over to... Let's turn it over to George. Let's let George Bush, the financial wizard, let him... are you Looney Tunes? Come on. Come on. I don't know. Sometimes doing this show is fun, and sometimes it isn't. But that was a fun phone call right there. I did enjoy that. Paul Krugman doesn't know what he's talking about. I love it when guys make statements like... You know, Paul Krugman is so damn smart that it's you know, you got to stop him ever since. Okay, now, what did you mean by that, Paul? Well, let me explain. He's good about explaining things. I will say that. He can explain it in layman's terms when you make him. But he is a genius when it comes to such things. He really is. And speaking of managing money, we had Mr. Bush... started off with $15 million for the tsunami relief fund, and he upped it, and he made it look like, gee whiz, look at me, I'm doing such a good... You know the only reason he upped that $15 million is because of pressure. The rest of the world looked at him and said, what, are you kidding me? $15 million? The rest of the world was appalled. And how many Republicans, how many compassionate conservatives have you heard this week? And I have heard many, and I know many of you had too. All these compassionate conservatives says, what do you mean send money over to those tsunami people? First of all, they're a bunch of ragheads. They don't deserve our money. They're Muslims. They're dirty Muslims. We don't want to give them any money. They don't need any money in the first place. They lived on nothing. Let them live on nothing again. I've heard many, many callers to Republican shows this week say such things. Have you heard Michael Savage? Heard Michael Savage go off on a rant about the tsunami victims? You know, he made it sound like it was heaven on earth over there and we should just let them drown in it. That's exactly what Michael Savage said. Well, I tell you. I hope you all will be generous with the tsunami victims. It's a tragedy on this earth, unprecedented in my lifetime, and many of your lifetimes as well. I do hope you will remember Martin Luther King's birthday coming up on Monday. I had someone say to me the other day, said, well, yeah, but that's a black holiday. You know, that's what a silly, silly thing it is to say. Obviously, somebody that doesn't know very much, but, you know, Martin Luther King did every bit as much for white America as he did for black America. Because by helping to eliminate racism every white person in this country has benefited from that in one way or another. We could not go on living with this horrible, horrible thing from the past, racism. And this man, this brave man who gave his life in the service, really in the service of every black man and white man in this country, should be remembered, and it should be remembered with a lot of thought. Martin Luther King's birthday had a hard time being even accepted as a holiday here in this country, which always appalled me from day one. I remember back where I'm from, one of the school boards said they would never, never, never celebrate Martin Luther King, but the state came along and made him do it, and I guess they are now. So, with the utmost humility, Martin Luther King led this country to bigger and better things, and eliminating some of the racism, and most of all, focusing our attention on it. And I hope you all have your attention on what's left of racism, and resolve that within yourself and the people you know to help stop it. You're listening to The Guy James Show. You've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you next week.
Guy James Show is the cooperative effort of a talented and dedicated staff. Executive producer, Gene Charles. Research director, Michael Merrick. Production manager, Frank Princeton. Production assistant, Liz Laura. Marketing director, Marlene Jones. Program coordinator, Martha Simon. We thank the staff for their continued dedication. And we thank you, the listeners, for your interest in our show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. This has been The Guy James Show.
News, weather, and traffic station. Wink WNOG.
CBS News. I'm Dave Barrett. Sentenced to 10 years behind bars for his role in the Iraqi prisoner abuse scandal. Army Specialist Charles Grainer had tried to give his side of the story during today's hearing at Fort Hood, Texas. Reporter Jay Gormley was there.
For nearly 3 hours, Grainer told a 10-member military jury that military intelligence ordered him to break down detainees for interrogation. Grainer says he complained to the chain of command that he did not agree with the way Iraqi detainees were being treated. The 36-year-old says military intelligence responded by stating, "We know what we're doing. Follow our instructions."
After sentence was pronounced, Gormley...